Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Monday, October 26, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. I have Derek Bros joining me on the Daily Wrap-Up to go over some of his recent articles, some really interesting things taking place today from a lot of different discussions we've had, as well, of course, the upsetting discussion that we're going to begin with, which is Derek Bros' censorship. Well, I think it's upsetting at the same time invigorating in a way that we're going to talk about it, that this is the beginning and not the end of something. And I really do think this applies much more than just T-Lab or Ryan or Derek. I think this is right now, whether it's the Q people or anybody else, there's this weird momentum that's been building because of their censorship. And I think they didn't necessarily expect it the way that we're seeing it today. But we're going to talk about all of that. And it's just a pleasure to have Derek on. We haven't had him on for a while. So thanks for joining us, Derek.
Hey, thanks for having me on, brother. And I'm happy that you've been kind of emphasizing that lately when we've been talking, that this is the beginning, because it's been a good reminder for me.
Yeah, it can be hard. I mean, you know, we put so much work into the channels and the, you know, the just the creative effort and the research and even just making, you know, thumbnails for videos, you know, the effort that we put into these things. And in some of those cases, you lose parts of that because they just, you know, delete it all. And really, that shouldn't be something that's allowable in the sense that in the way that it's happening or in any regard, censorship. So it's important that we make sure more than just ourselves, but everybody knows this is something that needed to happen. And even myself, there's a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit of a bittersweet scenario, but I'm, you know, it's important that we see that this is the beginning of the change that needs to happen. And it's not just about YouTube individually, as I think we all know, it's a much larger discussion to be had. So let's start off with that. And so why don't you let us know what happened? You know, I mean, everyone knows about, for the most part, how this has been developing, but what was your experience and what was the appeal process like and so on? Because that's been the most kind of sticky part of this, is it seems there's just a wild lack of accountability or any kind of process.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like you've been censored. Everybody else we know has been censored to one degree or another. So it's been building up for the last couple months for me. On my channel, The Conscious Resistance, we had a strike back, I want to say in August maybe. And that was the first time I've had like an actual strike on my channel where, you know, they're like, hey, this is your first warning. I've had videos just taken down outright with no sort of appeal process. Just like, hey, we took this video down, we don't like it, it doesn't fit our community guidelines. And that was stuff related to 9/11, to Zionism, you know, different interviews I've done with interviewing other people. So I've had that happen. I've had certain videos just taken down, or, hey, we're going to put this on private, we're going to do age restrictions. But that stuff seemed to be increasing more recently, of course. And our first actual strike, though, on the channel was from one of my contributors, because on my website, we had, you know, a number of different people contributing. And it's a great young journalist activist named Johan, who's from India, and he's been doing a great job exposing the masks and the lies and how they are way far ahead with the biometrics and the Aadhaar Foundation system. And, you know, so he's been doing a lot of good work, and he was putting some of that content on our channel. And that was our first video that got just outright deleted. It was a video that he'd put together showing Indian activists and protesters burning their masks in the streets. And that was, of course, taken down. That was our first strike. And then a few weeks later, we had another one that was unrelated, but it just seemed like they were starting to go through our videos looking for anything they could to pull things down. So then I got a 1 week ban. I came back from that 1 week ban. I think about it, a week and a half later, I got put on a 2 week ban. And I was just coming back from this 2 week ban just last week. And even as I was getting ready to come back from my 2 week ban, they were still messing with my videos. I got a notification that one of my 9/11 mini documentaries from 2015, that was just about 9/11 truth and all that issue, basically got put on age restriction. So, you know, they just slowly were kind of amping these things up. And I knew, and then when my ban was turned off and I was, you know, allowed to put videos out again, I was very hesitant and even just uncertain of what to do, because it's like, I have one strike left. The first strike was supposed to expire at the end of November. So I was kind of contemplating, hey, should I just put my work on hold? I mean, that's not really what I want to do at all. And we're clearly at a very crucial time where it's, you know, especially with the exposed warp speed investigation you and I and Whitney have been doing, it's a very crucial time. The elections are coming up. You know, we're trying to speak to people about dark winter and all these things. It didn't seem like I could just sit on my ass for the next month and, you know, hope that they didn't delete me anyways.
You just made me think of something very, very relevant that I don't know how I didn't put my, you know, grasp in the moment. You know, when my supposed first, you know, I did the same thing. I was like, should I just wait? And obviously I chose not to. You can see the date. I think I have it saved somewhere. November 3rd was the date when my suspension was up. That seems oddly perfectly timed, right? And it's like, and it's hard because I think we all understand why somebody might choose to self-censor in a situation like that. And I don't even think we can judge because it's a hard situation. Sure. But you're right. I mean, that seems like the point is they need us to not say these things until the election's over.
Oh, absolutely. And I did, you know, converse with you and some other friends about the whole thing. And just like as an example, Brian from High Impact Flicks, he was like, man, I love your channel. I don't want to see you get deleted. And he was trying to give me some ideas. Like he had a big channel, 500,000 subscribers, which I think they finally gave him back. He says the only way that happened is he took down all his videos, you know, years worth of videos, not put them on private. He took them down, deleted them, and lost millions of views to his channel. And he was, you know, recommending like, hey, you should do something similar, or, you know, try to speak in the code words like people are doing. You know, they don't say the word COVID, or they don't say this or that, or, you know, that happened a few months ago. I remember everybody was spelling out 5G. It's like FI, like thinking that was going to somehow, like, I get the whole idea that algorithms clearly right. can detect words, but just for me, again, self-censoring was not the way I want to go. I don't judge anybody else for the tactics they choose.
I agree.
But so I was kind of contemplating what to do. And in the end, when my channel came back on, first I did a video saying, hey, I've been gone for 2 weeks. If you're only following me here, you missed the 14 videos I put out because I didn't stop producing content in that time. I just was uploading it elsewhere. So I did that. And then I started feeling good and I was like, hey, I'm going to start uploading. So I started uploading the videos. And again, it's important stuff. I just felt like, look, we're at this most crucial time where the election's coming up. We know they're pushing forward with the vaccines and so many things that we're going to touch on today that it just felt like I couldn't sit there and wait, definitely couldn't wait 30 days and just do nothing. Right. So I started uploading and some of my videos that I had produced during the 2 week ban that I felt like were most important. And one of those includes the article that I wrote recently about wearable technology and injectables and all that, that we're going to cover. And it was actually that video that ultimately was my third strike. And they used some BS, of course. They said that content that is trying to profit off of or sell pharmaceuticals or prescription drugs or something like that. Like,
that's what we're doing. How ridiculous is that?
and the crazy thing is, I mean, the title of the video, I made it as probably like as milquetoast as possible. It was just the future of healthcare is wearable technology. And, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, they're coming for you or something. Right. It was just very innocuous. And still, you know, that was the strike. And yeah, there was a quote unquote appeal process. I remember, so my channel turned back on Thursday morning, this past Thursday. I put out that first video. Then I started uploading my videos. I did my live show on Friday night. And thankfully I did take one last screenshot of my channel just because I wanted to sort of know like where my numbers were at and how many views I had and all that kind of stuff. And I shared it Friday before I was going to bed saying, this is what we're trying to save and hope to keep, you know, from the censorship. Probably an hour from that, I didn't check again because I just went to bed. But when I woke up the next morning, people had already been commenting, dude, it's gone. I can't find your channel. So it happened pretty quickly after I did my live show last week. And I do think that some of the stuff I talked about is some of what we're going to be talking about here and that it's important information that people need to know about and that we've been banging our heads against the wall trying to get people to listen. And I do think it's not a coincidence that the people connected to these stories that I've been covering, that Whitney's been covering and you have, include Google, include Apple, include a lot of big tech that are connected to this. And of course, the government themselves. So there are people who stand to benefit from keeping the public aware of these issues, because the more people who are concerned about this, like even just today, I posted my most recent article from Last American Vagabond on my the Conscious Resistance Facebook page. And there's some smart ass coming on with some Snopes links to tell me how this has all been debunked and that Gates is not doing any of this ID 2020 and this crazy, you're so paranoid, God, even USA Today says this is fake. And you know, of course we got the contracts now, we have like the OWS map of everything, you know, and so, yeah, man. But I started my channel. I started YouTube in 2010. I had two other previous channels that I started on, but I started the Conscious Resistance in 2013, around the same time you started your original T-Lab channel. Mm-hmm. And it sucks. Of course, it sucks to put that much time and energy. I think I had 2,200 videos. I had a dozen documentaries, you know, some of my city council visits and things that have received millions of views. And, you know, it's I think the work is there. People can't unsee the things they have seen, but it does make it more difficult now for that quote unquote normie audience to just stumble across the information that we put out there. Right. And, you know, I don't really want to create a second YouTube channel and have to fight that whole game again, but I have put in some thought to at least starting like maybe a channel that's just conscious resistance documentaries and at least putting my documentaries back online, because I mean, of course they're on Library, they're on Float, they're on all the other great alternative places, but some of that information, it needs to have a mainstream audience. Like, I'm glad we all know that this stuff is going on, but there are stuff like real investigative work that I did on the Finders cult, for example, that doesn't exist anywhere else. That's not out there. And basically if it doesn't exist on the internet, and it, I'm going to put it in a book form, hopefully soon, so that it can actually be in physical form. But it, without that, it's basically gone. It's just memory hold, you know? And yeah. That is just as one example, that is a documented case of government covering up human trafficking, child trafficking, and that kind of stuff could just be gone to the pages of history forever. And that's what they want. They want this stuff to be erased. And so, you know, I am, of course, most of my channel has been backed up on Library and BitChute. And I don't know if you've had this trouble though, man. I actually realized that a lot of my stuff isn't there. I've been telling people, hey, all of my work's backed up there, because I did sync my channels up. But now that I've deleted off YouTube, I've started searching for some of my videos and they're not there. So I don't know if it's just on Library's end, but thankfully I have all my own stuff backed up on hard drives. I did see this coming, and years ago, I not even just from my channel, I've downloaded every interview that I've ever done from other people's channels, from Corbett, from your channel, from, you know, Dollar Vigilante, every other place that I've appeared that I could find. I downloaded for my own purposes and my own research, and I will begin. Now I have to begin the tedious process of fixing all the broken YouTube links on my website, and that's going to be fun. But yeah, man, we're not going to stop. It was expected. We knew this was coming. I've personally been telling people to join alternative social media networks for 5 years now. And the purge of the first sort of wave of purges started in October 2018, just months after Facebook partnered with the Atlantic Council. Right. So, you know, this isn't the first time we've dealt with this, and it was something to be expected. But I did have maybe some naive hope or wish that maybe I could make it to 100K before they delete me, or maybe I'll be able to get out this next documentary project I'm working on. And I've got like a new mini documentary that will probably be out tomorrow on Dark Winter that I was really hoping to get out prior, but you know, alas, it's not. But I'm going to put it out there, and maybe it'll make its way on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, we just out of sheer luck have our Restream back end connection to our backup TLAB channel, because we're banned on Google side. So I can't log into anything. I can't even comment unless I'm using Restream to push it through. So we should stream your docs on here. So get them out there on the YouTube channel. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a matter of time before my regular work gets that channel pulled down too. The Dr. Mikovits interview, which we did, was, I mean, it was probably 10 minutes they pulled that down on YouTube, but now it's got almost 15,000 views on BitChute, right? So it's definitely pushing it out there. I think we had somewhere, you know, between 15 and 20 million views in regard to The Last American Vagabond. Same way, we had just barely crossed 100,000. You know, it's just clear that they're paying attention to that reach there. I can't believe that they're suggesting that you are the one selling big pharma drugs or something. It's just, what an absurd argument coming from the very entities who their primary funding source is big pharma. It's just, they don't have, they have no shame to push these things. And I do believe that all of this is about Operation Warp Speed and the work that we've been doing. I think that's what this, at least the straw that broke the camel's back. It's very clear that there's something there that seemingly not even other independent media is wanting to touch. It just blows my mind right now. But I wanted to ask you in regard to that first strike you got before we move forward into your articles, when you said they were burning masks and it was a protest, what did they say was the reasoning for censoring that? Because it's a protest, right? I mean, that's interesting.
Well, because the reasons for not liking the masks, of course, they don't align with World Health Organization policy. And I mean, and they straight up say that in the appeals that, like,
okay.
And I know that you and Whitney had recently talked about the YouTube changes as well, where they said, like, anybody who's promoting misinformation about COVID vaccines that aren't even out yet, like, could, you know, will be deleted. But yeah, that was one of the reasons for the strike, is basically at some point somebody said something in the video that didn't align with World Health Organization policy. So it had to be
credible. It's incredible. Yeah. I mean, yeah, because now even protests are not allowed on them too, because it aligns with some back. I mean, it's just incredible where we are today. I mean, I hope people are beginning to see this. It's just, these are It's not the look. There's censorship from a state level, which is Google, which is YouTube, is just never acceptable. But nonetheless, I would personally argue, and maybe it's just my opinion, but that the work of Derek, for instance, is light years ahead of some of these other people that have been censored. Again, I'm not arguing that anybody should be censored, but for someone like Derek, who is, you know, painstakingly sourcing his material, showing you his work, showing you, like, think about math in school. You know, he's the guy showing you his work. That's how you find out how he reached his conclusions, right? That doesn't happen on this other side. And so when we see this kind of censorship, it just needs to kind of wake some people up. And that's, I really do think that's happening. I think people more than ever are going, really? Like, that's just the next level, which, I mean, it brings us to Operation Warp Speed, which I argue is really—
Let me just say one more thing.
Oh, yeah, please, go ahead.
So, I mean, I just want to make kind of emphasize the point that you just made, because I'm not here to bash anybody else's work at all, but there is a huge dearth of investigative work generally, but especially in the YouTube crowd. I mean, like, some of us write articles, some of us produce video content, some of us do a little bit of both. But I mean, when you really look at the remaining channels, other than Corbett, like, there are not very many people who are doing actual investigative work. There are people who are talking about the mainstream news from a slightly different perspective, but there's not very many people who are digging. And again, this is not attacking anybody for the style that they choose to do their reporting or their YouTube channel. That is your choice to do so. But for the person like myself, for example, who likes to dig deep and wants to look at channels that are going to be not only producing interesting content, but something that's going to teach me something more than I can just find on CNN. You know, if you're talking about something I can see on CNN, it's, your content's probably not for me, because unless you're telling me why that's a lie or what the deeper levels are that they're not explaining, it's just, to me, it's just parroting the mainstream again. But what you're doing, what Whitney's been doing, what Corbett continues to do, thankfully, but hopefully, you know, more than likely won't be for very long. And then a few other people that I can think of, there's not many of us there. And I mentioned the 2018 purges. Back then, when I was writing for the Anti-Media and the Free Thought Project, we had 3-4 million likes on Facebook. We're reaching hundreds of millions of people every week, easy, no problem. And then, like that, October 18, 2018, gone. Page is gone, Twitter account's gone. It was sort of a cross purge like we're seeing now, where some people are getting their MailChimps taken down, their PayPal accounts frozen, things like that. So I feel like that first purge back in 2018, it did a great job of getting rid of the journalists who were writing articles and were doing that sort of things. And then now, the last couple of years, we've seen it more towards the video content creators, mm-hmm. where there are, now we're in a position where there's not very many websites left that are doing hard-hitting, long-form written articles. You know, Mint Press and a few others are still out there, but of course, they're shadow banned and censored in their own ways. And then when it comes to YouTube, like I said, there's not very many people who are doing that deep digging. So I just think that it is a very purposeful thing done by design. Maybe ultimately everybody will be gone, or maybe the people who aren't really offering anything too hard hitting will be allowed to stay. And that will be the sort of alternative light media or something like that. You know, I don't know, but I definitely think that it's important for people to see that the censorship is wrong across the board. And yet at the same time, I think it is important to emphasize that not all of our work is equal. And I don't say that to like toot my horn or yours or anything. I know that we do great work, but I just think it is important for people to understand that not all of our work is exactly equal. Some of us are actually digging and touching on things that others won't dare go near.
Yeah. I reiterate the idea of actually sourcing your material and showing, I mean, think about the reality and why at some point YouTube decided to start censoring based on the links you included to de-incentivize sourcing what you're talking about, right? That's the point, right? And that's why you have people like Corbett and myself who put our links on the website, which then even some people are just too lazy even to get the link to go to the source material, you know, and that's, they know that. And then to wrap this up, and I wholeheartedly agree with what you said there, Derek, the idea that they can be at a point now where they're openly censoring even what they say does not violate their rules, right? The whole borderline thing was what kind of opened this door where, well, it's not really a violation, but we feel it's not acceptable for our platform. Okay, well, you're a publisher then, right? And since you're working with the government, that's open censorship, right? And we just need to see how wildly off the rails this is. And how, by the way, all those people out there that are going, yeah, but I don't like you, so it's okay with me, it's gonna swing back around and hit you in the butt just like it did with everybody else. So sadly, got to wake up, right? I mean, it's just, that's where we are today. But bringing this into Operation Warp Speed, which I really do think is where this is stemming from, or really the work that we're talking about here, is it's something that is so clearly tied with the hidden aspect of what this is today, right? Operation Warp Speed, in my opinion, is the most stunningly, what's the right word for it, is lacking transparency. I mean, everything they're doing is somehow, you know, not allowed to be seen by Americans, diving into things that we would otherwise be not okay with, breaking, you know, violating your constitutional rights. I mean, this is just a one-stop shop for just absolute outrage. And it's that's why people don't want us to talk about it. So I mentioned this already on our show, and I went over the ins and outs of the, just the horrifying reality that we're finding our way into. So why don't you, if you want to touch on this and let me know what stood out to you and where you see this going.
Yeah. Let's go jump over to the other one first. The six or seven contracts, yep. If you got that one pulled up. Yep. So this one, I think while on the surface for some people, it might not be immediately obvious that this is tied to Operation Warp Speed, because obviously Operation Warp Speed is specifically focused on the vaccine effort. I do think that this fits under the same umbrella. Clearly, it involves the National Institutes of Health, which is part of the whole recovery effort. It involves the U.S. government. And as the title indicates, it involves the Gates Foundation. It involves DARPA and big tech, including Google and Apple. And I happened to just come across this story last month. And it, again, this is another story we covered that I haven't seen any other outlet even focus on or talk about. And I understand there's a lot going on, but I do think this one is very indicative of what's coming. So there's a list of these companies that were awarded $22.8 million from the NIH. Of course, that's taxpayer dollars. And their focus was on artificial intelligence, machine learning, using smartphone apps, wearable devices, and software that they say is going to identify and trace individuals and keep track of your COVID test results and monitor your health status and all these kinds of things. And so I decided, like, all right, well, we need to know who these companies are, because other than IBM, none of the other, and the University of California, none of the other names immediately jumped out at me that as like, oh, I know that company or I've heard of them. But for those who hadn't seen this one, it's the companies are iCrypto, Shiatica, the University of California, PhysIQ, Vibrant Health, IBM, Evidation Health, and another one called Care Evolution. And basically what I've found the more I dug into these, well, for one, I'll say iCrypto and a couple others, the things that I thought were kind of interesting about it is there's literally nothing about these companies. You know, you would think these companies that are being awarded millions and millions of dollars from the U.S. government, at the very least, they would have a press release announcing it. But other than the government announcing it, there was at least two or three of them that I came across. Their websites, I mean, if I was a suspicious person, I would think these might be front companies, because literally they have no history. They have some of them, at least one or two of them, had no history of other contracts prior to this. Their websites offer little to no information about who they are, who's on the board, what they do exactly, other than, you know, the vague kind of reference to things like smartphone-based platforms and things like that. But I was able to start digging into some of them and see that they're all connected. Just for example, iCrypto, although they have little on them, I found some other contracts where they talk about trust in digital ID platforms and mobile-centric biometric authentication. You know, so we see a lot of the technocratic terms being used in here. And again, they have a Twitter account that has two tweets from 2018. So right. I'm just curious, like, how this company, which it doesn't seem to have any major present in any way, is getting awarded millions of dollars.
Here's an interesting thought too. Remember that Moderna, a company that is obviously tied to Fauci himself, the NIH, individuals within that with their contracts and, you know, their patents for things, which is crazy in and of itself. But Moderna, as I understand it, has never actually brought something to market. This is like a new, RNA vaccines are their real, I mean, I think mRNA is actually their stock ticker on the stock exchange. You know, it's like that's their whole focus, and yet they're getting huge evaluations, massive contracts for something that's never even actually been proven to work. And I think that's what a lot of this stuff is. I think they're even the warp speed discussions in the contracts, in the outline, clearly states that they want to use this new technology and new avenues to create this new pathway. So there, that's the objective, which I think paints a perfect picture of building that technocratic revolution, like exactly the kind of way they're going. And yet, meanwhile, people on Twitter and the blue checks are saying we're crazy for arguing that that's even remotely being built. And they're openly telling us. I think that's crazy.
I guarantee you none of those blue checks have ever actually looked into any of these companies or even heard about them. And it does appear that these companies were almost like plucked out of the ether and just, oh, given millions of dollars to run this. I don't know exactly what that means per se. I'm not trying, you know, I'm just saying it's odd to me whenever I think, whenever I look at the list of companies, people who don't have much of a presence, they don't really seem to be predominant or well-known. I mean, I would imagine if you ask people in this tech sector, particularly in the digital health tech sector, that maybe some of them have heard of these companies because they're in that industry, but definitely they're not companies that are known outside of that. So that was peculiar to me, but I did find the usual things. It basically, what it comes down to is that these companies are promoting wearable devices, both in the forms of smartphones, but also like the Fitbit type devices that are going to track your biology, essentially keep track of your health signs and your COVID symptoms and your testing and all that sort of thing. And in the event that, say, you go get a test and then you're connected to one of these companies, biosensors, which is the term that some of them have used, or even if you're just using one of their cell phone apps, that their job is basically to alert the company, and then I would assume their governmental partners that they are contracting with, hey, somebody on our digital role here, that their temperature is now rising and they could potentially be a COVID case, or, you know, things of that sort. And they also want to use this information for the healthcare providers, for employers, and these kinds of things. So I think that in the coming weeks and months, we're going to see these companies and their technology that they're developing right now and that they're rolling out. It's going to be, these are basically going to be the tools and that they use to determine who needs to get quarantined. And it's all part of the whole biosecurity state that you've been covering and I have been covering here for a while now, that these are going to be the mechanisms that alert the authorities, the health authorities, governmental authorities, your boss, et cetera. Oh, Mr. Johnson over in Sector 7, his temperature is rising. We might need to send him home and have him quarantined for 2 weeks or whatever. I mean, this is what they're working on. And the first article that we're looking at now, it deals with the contracts and talking about how these companies are involved in that. And then it gets to the end of the article, kind of segues into the next one by talking about one of the companies, PhysIQ. They have this whole crazy thing. It's called COVID-19 Decompensation Index Digital Biomarker. So it's a mouthful, but it's basically a personalized AI algorithm that runs on their computer program they've already have built. And they want you to wear this chest-worn disposable sensor that they call the Vital Patch from a company that's called Vital Connect, and use that with their AI algorithm to, again, keep track of your personalized analytics and then to communicate that with your doctor and whoever else gets access to that. And it should be noted that PhysIQ, this company that's developing this Vital Patch with the company Vital Connect, that they recently got a contract with the Department of Defense and the Henry Jackson Foundation specifically for this, to collect and analyze wearable sensor data to better understand the pathophysiology of COVID-19. And this is what they said for continuous monitoring of patients. So this isn't just like you go to the doctor and they, you know, run some analytics on you and tell you, hey, this is, you know, they're doing like a physical. This is constant monitoring of you and your entire life. They want you to be able to wear these patches. And apparently the military is already starting to use these in military hospitals in the US and in some places in Southeast Asia. I wasn't able to find a list of the hospitals that they are using them, but they did admit that the military is already testing them out.
Yeah.
So
we just did a whole cover on that and the tie into the military seating, like been wanting this for a long time and saying they were going to do it in regard to predicting COVID back in May and then kind of getting quiet. And now it's being pushed again in this last month. The one that I was showing here is the Profusa chip specifically. Yep. And the reason this one's so relevant, and by the way, that's supposed to be your skin right there. The green thing is an actual injectable. They consider that to be minimally invasive. That's one of those considered minimally invasive, the one that literally injects right into your arm. And then they have the outside sensor that can be used to pull the data from it. Now, the Profusa chip is the one backed by Matt Hepburn, who is one of the leading individuals in Operation Warp Speed around the vaccine, yep, as well as Moncef Salawi, as you know, who also is adamant about bio-injectable nanoplatforms and all this different stuff, which, you know, brings us to the article you were referencing here, that they're all tied into the whole program. You know, it's incredible.
And it's so many of the same players, man. I mean, because like I mentioned with the contracts, you have DARPA, you've got one of the other companies that got the contract, they're working with BARDA, which is like the biosecurity state version of DARPA that we've been hearing more and more about recently. But so Evidation Health partnering with BARDA, partnering with the Gates Foundation for a COVID-19 detection algorithm. And that company itself that I thought was interesting is that they have already launched this data platform 2 years prior. So it just, another example that a lot of these companies coincidentally seem to be working on these technologies. And you could argue, well, hey, you know, everybody knows that we are, Bill Gates was warning we're facing potential for pandemics. So lots of money was already invested in it. And magically now things are being developed and it's going to help with COVID. That's one take on it. I think that there's a little bit more that we know about foreknowledge that kind of makes it a little bit more difficult to just kind of go with that narrative that they were just happen to be working on these things conveniently at the same time. The last thing I want to say, though, before we jump to the other one and start getting into the injectables and the bioelectronics, I ended the article with about the NIH contracts just to kind of put it into context, because a lot of people are aware of contact tracing apps. And we talked about that a few months ago, and those are still developing. Apple and Google have already kind of built their own APIs for them so that people could build those contact tracing apps, and now they're making their own. But as I was researching this article, I found that there's the Common Pass, there's COVID Check, Common Health. These are all coming from a particular project called the Common Project. And I thought it was interesting because the one that we've been hearing about in the last couple of weeks that is now being tested in the UK airports is the Common Pass. And the Common Pass is the one that is being developed in conjunction with the World Economic Forum, which of course they're the ones pushing the Great Reset that we're going to talk about in just a bit. So I just want people to understand that, like, you have the companies, the Rockefeller Foundation, the CDC, Clinton Health Initiative, World Economic Forum, all of them are pushing contact tracing apps. Then you've got the NIH contracting millions of dollars with these eight different companies that are developing software, wearable technology, smartphone apps. And one of them is talking about being able to use regular Wi-Fi for contact tracing so they can just track everybody everywhere. And all of that is happening at the same time as we're seeing the push towards the bioelectronics, the vaccine patches, the Profusa, you know, beneath the skin, all the things that many people have been hearing about. And as I was telling you earlier, these are the things that Facebook fact checkers are claiming are fake, that there's no truth to these. So there's a lot going on right now at one time. And this is, I think, again, the importance of Operation Warp Speed and why exposing that is so vital right now, because, you know, the deadline, when we first wrote about this, when I was first writing about Trump appointing Moncef Slaoui back in May, they said that the first 100 million doses were going to be delivered by the end of this month, October. It doesn't appear like that's going to be true. Of course, a lot of that was probably just election rhetoric. But either way, the point was they said there was going to be 100 million doses by the end of this month, 100 million by the end of December, and then 100 million by January. Even if we take them at their worst and assume by January or early 2021, these things are all rolling out. This is a live process that is taking place right now. This is not the time to be sitting on the sidelines and just sort of observing this as if it's not going to affect you in a very real way. Because I know sometimes when we're talking about contracts and technology and companies and this and that, that maybe it gets a little bit lost in the weeds for some people, but I want people to really understand that this is real life. This is happening right now. Like, these things are being unfolded as we speak. And just because you're not hearing about it on CNN or on Fox News or MSNBC, it doesn't mean it's not happening in the background.
Yeah, very well said. And that's the point, is that all the other stuff, the peripheral, all the tangential discussions and all the Congress and even the election to some degree, I argue, is entirely meant to stop you from seeing this. I mean, I think the two-party deception is one of the biggest blocks to people actually, because that's what I think a lot of people on either side are seeing a lot of the things we're talking about, but they refuse to acknowledge that their side might play a part in this clearly uniparty, all-encompassing problem. You know, it's things like this that you pointed out that show us these things that, and by the way, this applies to both sides. It's not just Trump's side, but in this case, Trump's the president, so it makes it a little bit more relevant to where we're going. But it's just crazy how this continues to happen, as well as the one you wrote about Trump and the funding of Gavi, right? That was one right in the beginning of this whole discussion in regards specifically that was just like, that's ridiculous. And now clearly you're being vindicated to a large degree on that, even from Trump supporters, I argue. But which
I think the evidence has become even more strong because, you know, the whole Gavi thing, like, you know, we got a lot of pushback from that where people were like, oh no, that's fake. And you know, this, and it's, we've proven for a fact that that's where Trump is sending US taxpayer dollars. But even to me, the fact that the NIH story we just did and the one we're about to touch on, both of those involve companies that are connected to the Gates Foundation as well. So I just don't see that, you know, again, not to rip too hard on the Trump side of things, because they're all criminals as far as I'm concerned, that if it really came down to it and Trump was really, you know, standing up to Gates and the globalists or whatever, then why is nearly every single company that's involved in Operation Warp Speed getting money from the Gates Foundation? Like, is it just, I mean, I don't know, but those are the questions I think we should be asking.
And that's not like an enemies closer kind of thing, which is that easy thing they say, oh, enemies closer, which, you know, what does that even mean at this point?
Teaching them something.
Right. But if we're talking about financial investments, and I mean, realistically, if you wanted to protect against something they're doing, there's just no logic to allowing this kind of influence and control. And this article was a really important one, because even the argument against this was, no, it was U.S. aid. But you make it clear in this very article that there was two different times directly from Trump's administration that they sent over $1 billion, all said and done, in addition to what the U.S. aid did, and that he also endorsed, which goes to Gavi, which goes to Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which goes to funding the World Health Organization. So it's very clear. And that's why this one was such an important article, that still is, that I think is actually still waking up some people on one side of this two-party illusion to see that it's all of it. That's why I'm trying to get people to think it's your government. It's not just the Republicans, the Democrats, it's your government's doing this to you. And if we can realize that and just hold them accountable as opposed to one side or the other, and leave their, you know, when they come back and say it's because them, we go, we don't care. It's on you guys, right? You guys deal with it and get back to us, you know, which won't ultimately happen. But which brings us to this discussion of the there's so many ways, the biomedicine, the bio-injectable nano platforms, the DARPA's injectable platform is all over the place. And that's what's so frustrating for people like Derek and I that are, you know, trying to have an intelligent discussion about this, not saying it's going to end the world and we're all going to die or, you know, whatever, which is certainly a possibility, but that we just say this is something that's happening and that we need to discuss, and they censor us for doing so. It's so very real. I mean, the fact that these things have been being built for decades should be enough to wake people up to the reality these aren't fake news, which is actually what they're trying to say about this stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I think that where we get the most pushback is probably when it does come to this talk of the Profusa chip, mm-hmm. the quantum dot tattoo, and now these vaccine patches, which they call a nano patch because it was developed in a particular school in Australia, particularly in their nanotechnology school, happened to be funded by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And this one, what I wanted to do with this was basically like flashback to May when I wrote that first piece about Monsef Slaoui, and like, hey, look, here's a warning sign. Trump is calling for Operation Warp Speed, and he's appointing a GlaxoSmithKline executive who's tied to Moderna, who's tied to bioelectronics and all this stuff. And I wanted to bring up that background back in May, and here we are, October, and it's becoming even more relevant, I think. So I brought up Slaoui's history, you know, his connection to GlaxoSmithKline. And the thing is, it's not that he was just an exec on the board of directors with GlaxoSmithKline. He specifically was working in research and development on vaccines. He was the chairman of Global Vaccines. So from a mainstream viewpoint, I guess it makes sense. Okay, well, if we're going to get somebody to head up this massive thing that's about developing a vaccine, let's pick a guy who's been the chairman of Global Vaccines. But it just shows you that the ties that he's picking from Big Pharma, from companies that have been sued for their dangerous vaccines.
Well, real quick, the difference is about, this is, the program is not about just developing a vaccine. It's about doing it safely, as you know. And so it's an odd choice to pick a businessman, a profit model motive type of person, as opposed to somebody who is going to make this right and effective, which I argue all of that's up in the air regardless. But I just want to point that out, like the argument, which may make sense to some people, vaccine person, it's the equivalent of Trump saying that, well, didn't you hear Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer? We can get this out tomorrow. And it's like, cool, let's listen to them who have a clear profit motive. You know, it doesn't make sense. And that's the first thing that stood out to me with him.
Yeah. And I think that you're right to kind of pause on that, because as I show in the article too, that Slaoui, when he first was appointed, there were a few people, and I found like some statements from like Elizabeth Warren and a couple others that were questioning him on his conflicts of interest, because he was, as we talked about, sitting on the board of directors of Moderna, and we've already talked about their role in the messenger RNA therapeutics and vaccines. But Slaoui is also, he apparently sold his stock of $12 million from Moderna, but he's still holding on to his stock from GlaxoSmithKline, which also stands to benefit from this whole thing. And he said that, you know, he's saving that for his retirement because he's hurting so bad that he needs to make sure he's got that $10 million in stock, you know, to retire. But I thought that was the most egregious kind of aspect, just while we're talking about the conflict of interest. Because again, people who aren't ready to go to the next level of like, hey, maybe there's a different purpose with these vaccines, or why would they push these forward? that's fine. Even on the surface level of, let's talk about conflicts of interest, this guy is holding stock in this company, then he's going to get put into a position where he's going to promote vaccines that he's still holding stock in. You know, there's a clear conflict of interest, just like when it comes to Gates. And ProPublica noted that Slowey was put in a special position, just kind of the way that Whitney's talked about with the OWS contracts, the way that they're filing those in a certain way that allows them to keep them from being accessed through Freedom of Information Act requests. Slowey was allowed to be contracted as like a private contractor, which means that he, you know, of course, can file under different rules, and it allows him to keep his finances a little bit more secret. And so he basically said that he would donate any increase in the value of his holdings that he has in GlaxoSmithKline to the NIH. Like, hey, if I make profit while this is going off, we'll give it to the NIH. But the contract specifically says on the last death of the employee and his or her spouse. So he's 61 years old now. Theoretically, this guy could live, you know, another 40 years or so, his wife just as long. And in the meantime, he will continue to profit off of whatever COVID vaccines or whatever work he's done. And then at some point, 40 years into the future, if anybody still cares or remembers, then I guess he's going to make a donation, you know, or his, whoever's in charge of his will then donate that money to the NIH. It's just, there's no accountability at all.
It shows you that it's about them getting money. It has nothing to do with what's right or what would influence his decisions. It's like, oh, as long as that money ends up back in our hands, who cares, right? I mean, whether it's the next 40 years or 2 years, he's dead after that. And it still is. What's the point of the point is that in the moment he has a profit motive, which would drive his decision and his, you know, decision making process. That's why conflicts of interest are bad. This is like 101 here. Like, it's so stupid that they go, well, he just, you know, his retirement. It's like we're talking about some, you know, fatherly figure that's just like, you know, it kind of chuckles about, oh, I just wanted my retirement. And it's like, that should have been an immediate issue for the media to go, well, no, that's still an obvious conflict of interest. But no, the point that you are. The fact that they say, oh, well, we'll just make him a contractor. Like, we're not talking about the restaurant down the street here. This is the White House, right? So for Trump to be like, we'll just kind of finagle our way around the words and terminology, it just shows you the way that they bring, this is how they come at all these problems, right? This is why they're violating contracts and norms and resolutions and treaties, because they just don't care. They're going to do what they want to do and make it work. You know, that's how I see that applying in the same way. And you're right to settle on the idea that this guy is just a corrupt position as opposed to what they may lead to is a good way to let people in on this conversation. And nobody should be okay with this. It's just wrong.
And I think it's also like, if the mainstream corporate media, now clearly we shouldn't look or expect them to do any sort of thorough reporting, but if there was anybody in the mainstream who still had a spine that wanted to do it, I mean, the story is right there waiting for it. You could have the public in an uproar, like the left-wing media, the Democrats, if they wanted to go after Trump. I mean, this is such an easy point to hit him on, like, right? Like, hey, Trump's appointing this big pharma exec and he's going to be reaping the profits. You know, why are they not focusing on it? It's because Operation Warp Speed benefits the Democrats and the Republicans. Again, back to what we were saying earlier, that it's not just about the parties. It's not just about, you know, this is just Trump being a bad guy or whatever. They both benefit from big pharma money. They both benefit from that. So of course they're not going to attack, you know, the trough that they feed from. But if anybody in the media actually wanted to do some real work, it's sitting right there just waiting for them to report on it. Unfortunately, it's not going to happen. Otherwise it would have happened by now.
Right.
And then this kind of gets into Slowey's work with, as I touched on a little bit in the May article, his other finances. He's on Medici investment firm, and that goes into a whole nother rabbit hole of everything they're invested into. But I think what's most important for the conversation today is that he was chairman of the board at Galvani Bioelectronics. And I know I saw you recently playing one of the videos where Slowey's talking about some of their work that they've done. And pretty much all the companies that he's sitting on the board of and is related to, including Moderna, they're all about vaccines, and a good amount of them are related to this bioelectronics, but the main focus is Galvani Bioelectronics, which I think this is the key point of, you can see the big tech side of, oh, coincidentally, we're talking about this story and it's one of the last ones I get to do before I get deleted on YouTube, that his partnership with Galvani, so he has Galvani, it's formed though out of a partnership with what was known as Google Life Sciences. And of course that's an Alphabet company, and GlaxoSmithKline. So while he's at GlaxoSmithKline, he's chairman of the board, sitting on their, you know, their global vaccine chairman. And then during that time, Alphabet using Google Life, decides to create a new company with GlaxoSmithKline, Galvani Bioelectronics, and they put Slawi at the head of it. I mean, so it's clear that this guy is playing a major role in all this type of technology, which to me makes perfect sense why Trump chose him. I don't think it's any randomness or, you know, kind of coincidence that with all his background and his other work, that this is that this is the position he found himself in.
They've continued to say that bioelectrics, I mean, all the way back until what? I think it was 2006 when he started with GlaxoSmithKline, if I'm remembering that correctly, and until 2015. And that whole time period, that was adamant, right? It was about bioelectric medicine. I mean, even the one I played the video, they're referencing this one right here. The one that's like the neck. I even had people attack this image on Twitter. I forget what platform it was. Oh, fake news. Like, that's not about vaccine. It's bioelectric medicine, which was the other part of your article here. I guess people can't read titles even. But that is an incredibly alarming thing you're looking at there. It's implanted in like the neck. And he mentions it in that video. And so it just goes to show you that even things that I even played on the show that people are watching, they still call it fake news, you know? And that's the kind of thing that is an alarming. Well, the point was that he's talking about these things at that time and saying this is the future, this is where we're all going, and then goes to work for with Moderna, and at that point was saying that right about where we are now is when this would be like the time frame this is coming around. And I find it revealing, telling, that neither GlaxoSmithKline or Moderna are necessarily focusing on the thing that he said was a huge, you know, now he's over here working on this project. It just seems coordinated. You know, this is the time he said it would be coming around, and now he's working with the White House and no one else seems to be focusing on it. So clearly that's the project, right? I mean, that's how I see it. And now here they are driving this. And as we referenced, there's a lot of other people that are tied to bioelectrics, if not outspoken about it, like Hepburn, in this project for the vaccine. I mean, that's a reasonable question to be asking, and we're not allowed to, apparently, you know?
Yeah, and it's a little bit played out at this point, but so much of this reminds me of 9/11. I mean, as far as like people who just happen to be working on things for years, and then the event happens, and then they're like, hey, look what we got. We have all this stuff perfectly ready to roll out and make use of, because all those millions and billions of dollars we invested, they're not going to go to waste. You know, that's the thing, is that for people who, I know we're going to touch on the Great Reset a little bit too, because I think that's where this is all leading in the bigger picture, is the people who've been investing billions and billions of dollars into these types of technologies, they're not just going to go away if there's a new president. It doesn't matter who's the president. Like, it's not just going to all of a sudden disappear and all the shareholders and all the stocks are just going to disappear. And like, oh, well, I guess we had that in mind, but now there's a new president, so we'll just give up.
Or even the vaccine. Right. I mean, I keep saying this about the vaccine. It's like they keep saying that, oh, he's just doing this to, you know, trick the Democrats or whatever. And it's like that once he's elected or we have a new therapeutic, he'll drop it. And I'm like, what? That's the most unrealistic thing I've ever heard in my life. I mean, there's entire countries and organizations and billions of dollars riding on this. They're being made. You can't just be like, oh, well, we'll move forward. Let's get some hydroxychloroquine and we're all good. You know, that's not going to happen. Whether he forces it or not, that's the discussion. And that's where this stuff seems to be leading to, you know?
And I think it's also important just on that one point, because I've heard that as well, that people need to understand that when it comes to the idea of therapeutics, yes, things like hydroxychloroquine are considered like a therapeutic, but also the stuff we're talking about right here with Galvani Bioelectronics that Slawi was involved in, they consider these things to be therapeutics as well. And we're talking about miniaturized implantable devices that can modify electrical signals that pass along nerves in the body. And they, you know, they say this could help with arthritis, diabetes, and asthma. And maybe this technology, you know, in the right context with the right people, could be used for a lot of good. But when you understand this in the context of what we're talking about, I think it's definitely something to be worried about. But I just want people to understand that, like, when you hear Trump throw out the therapeutics word and then you just allow yourself to be lulled back to sleep, in some cases, they consider some of these very invasive things to be therapeutics. And also, Moderna, the people who are making the mRNA vaccine, their full name is Moderna Therapeutics. So just be aware that to them, a therapeutic doesn't necessarily exclude a vaccine.
That's a really, really, really important point that even for myself, that just kind of opened a new door for me in my mind. I think I'm even going to put that in the title of the show. Bioelectrics are therapeutics. And that's a huge connection right there that people need to think about. I guarantee that's going to awaken a few people right there, Derek. That's a good point.
Well, I hope so, man. I've been trying to shout that from the rooftops every time I get a chance, because I've seen people kind of use that as their fallback position. Like, no, didn't you hear he mentioned therapeutics? But when you actually look into the definition of therapeutics, it doesn't exclude vaccines per se. And again, it, like I just said, it doesn't exclude invasive things. And these miniature implantable devices were described by MIT in 2016 as hacking the nervous system. I know you've covered that before, but just to remind the audience, that's what we're talking about. So those are therapeutics that are miniature implantable devices that go into your body and send electrical signals along your nerves. And they are considered hacking your nervous system. So it doesn't mean that it's going to be any less invasive just because it might not be what you typically are expecting. And the next little part we get into here is the Vaxis nano patch, which goes along with the Profusa and other things. But what I think differentiates Vaxis, because this company is going to become increasingly important, even as I was writing this article, there was new information just as recently. So what, we're on October 26th, just less than a month ago, October 5th, this company Vaxis, which is connected to Australia and has received funding for by the Gates Foundation for a few years now, they were given another contract from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and BARDA for $22 million to conduct phase one studies using their, the full name is the high density microarray patch, but it's otherwise known as the nano patch. And like I said earlier, it's because it is originally coming out of nanotechnology. And that was being developed by the University of Queensland, the Australian Institute of Bioengineering and Nanotechnology. So specifically, like, this is coming from a school that focuses on nanotech. There's not, you know, they didn't just add that name nano patch for no reason. It's right. It's because that's the type of technology that they've used to create this thing.
If I could add real quickly, I just want people to realize that we're talking about a U.S. Health and Human Services Department, that their name is Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. They're literally, their objective is to invest money in the bioelectric medicine field. Like, this can't be conspiracy theory. We have an entire government entity that's their point is to take your money and make this your future. So I just have to be clear about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I want people to, you know, if you read the whole article, of course, I hope you will, but at the very least, check out the Vaxis company, because I had, when I first started putting this together, Ryan, I sent you a couple of links. It was like, this company Vaxis, this, I think, I'm pretty sure this is going to be important. And at that time, they hadn't even been given the $22 million from HHS yet, from BARDA. So that kind of all happened just in the last couple of weeks. What I had originally seen was that they were given $4.4 million from the Gates Foundation in 2016 to develop the nano patch, microarray patch technology. And this, at this point, it was for the measles and rubella vaccine. But then just back in March, Gates gave them another $5 million to conduct human trials for this Vaxis patch. And so again, we have this company, Vaxis, who has previously partnered with the World Health Organization, which is basically the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, mm-hmm. as well as partnered with pharmaceutical company Merck, and directly with the Gates Foundation to develop this technology. And so, you know, these things have been coming out, and this is more, it's just the applicator, right? So this thing itself is supposed to replace the tip, you know, the old school syringe and needle that they say, well, you know, there's a lot of people who are afraid of needles and, you know, they have to be shipped and kept in refrigerators. Well, this new Vaxis patch, which they describe as a hockey puck shaped applicator that has 9 by 9 millimeter array of thousands of short projections around 250 microns in length that can be coated with any vaccine. So any vaccine they think of at all can be just basically placed on these little micro projections, and then they just put that on your skin, and then it goes, you know, subdermal and passes on whatever vaccine they want. And of course, this is now being promoted in the context of COVID. And that's why I wanted to include it in the article, because just weeks ago, the CEO of Vaxis said that they are going to make that many, many more doses more quickly. And he specifically said in a pandemic response. And they also said that they're investigating opportunities to improve the performance of these vaccines, including against COVID-19. So I would absolutely expect that the Vaxis nanopatch is going to eventually be used to distribute a COVID-19 vaccine, especially because they're talking about how great it is. You don't have to refrigerate it. You can make so many more of them. I would guess that the military is going to be distributing these, and this could be whatever company they use for the vaccine. And as Whitney has talked about, there's probably going to be like 6 different vaccines. Mm-hmm. It'll probably be used in the form of the nano patch to actually, you know, put it in people's bodies.
I was just trying to find, it's just, I find this so fascinating these days, how quickly your Google search can just entirely change. I was looking this up the other day when this was coming out, and you could find a whole bunch. I mean, I could just show you, there's a bunch of images and discussions about this coming out now, because it's being discussed about the injuries that it causes. Like there was a bunch of images I found that seemingly are just no longer there, which I find interesting, of the little, you know, we're talking about something like this that has all these little spikes on it, which I find hard to believe that that won't potentially cause, like, think about it like this. A vaccine in general, we know, can cause a little bit of irritation by the skin along with a lot more serious problems, but that is possible too. So you're going to get this patch with all these different spikes, which will leave this huge spiked rash issue, which, by the way, I saw a bunch of examples of. I just find it odd, you know, tellingly odd that it's no longer there when you search for it. But the point is, there's a lot of potential issues from this too, that, you know, it just, they're driving in this direction, I think, at all costs, you know, regardless of the costs.
Absolutely. And the last point I want to make on the nano patch, I sort of was doing some digging into who is the creator of this technology. Obviously, we said the Vaxis company, but the actual technology itself was developed by Professor Mark Kendall. And again, his research group at the Australian Institute of Bioengineering and Nanotechnology at the University of Queensland. And that's actually how I first heard about this. I'd seen a report, I think, on Sky News that was talking about, oh, Australia just got a new injection of $5 million from the Gates Foundation, and now we're working on these nano patches for COVID. And that got my, you know, my mind thinking. And then sure enough, oh, HHS awards them $5 million for them to bring the same thing here in the US. But I thought it was interesting when you look into Professor Mark Kendall, he's actually the CEO of another company called Wear Optimo, and they promote their own, what they call micro wearable devices that he's promoting on his website. And of course, he's listed as an agenda contributor to the World Economic Forum, which, you know, leads into the whole Great Reset and everything else. But I mean, there's just, at some point, we need a massive whiteboard to draw all the connections between these different people and Operation Warp Speed and Gates and everything else, because they are immense. And I don't think those are connections that we should just simply dismiss offhand.
I agree completely. And I personally feel the wearables, even like the outside, you know, the one you were mentioning before that really just sticks to your skin, there's nothing technically inside. I think these are just steps to normalizing our direction towards the thing that, I mean, what we need to remember that you and I were touching on, people like Moncef Slaoui and Hepburn, this isn't, they're not right now saying, yeah, wearables, that's the way. They've been saying injectable stuff like the Profusa chip, like the thing he pointed on the neck a decade ago. Like that, they're straight up saying that that's where we should be going, that's where we are going. So now we find ourselves in a position where all of them are tied up with this, and they're now subtly going, yeah, you know, wearables might be the good way to go. That challenges exactly what they were saying a year ago, a decade ago. So ask yourself if that's just the segue into what they've told themselves, or maybe they really believe is what's best for us, regardless of what we actually want. You know, that's the direction it's going, to normalize us into saying, okay, well now, since these aren't really working, let's go to the Profusa route. Minimally invasive, you know?
Yeah, and I definitely think that, like you were just describing, that this is the process, right? If we can get people used to, let's remove the vaccine, the needle in the syringe itself, right? Which, like, yeah, a lot of people don't like shots. So that's going to be attractive to some people. Like, oh, I don't have to actually get a shot anymore. Even though, in fact, the little nano patch is a bunch of little shots.
Right.
But, you know, you convince people that that's the step towards that. And then, well, I'm just going to place this thing on your arm and it'll get, you know, it'll give you the medicine you need. And then the next thing is like, well, we're just going to place this thing on your arm and it's going to actually stay in your arm. And that'll allow us to help, you know, track your biology and your health and everything. And it'll be easier. And just, oh yeah, by the way, put on this biosensor and then we can, you know, we can have full connection to your biorhythms and everything. And if you want to use this, so, I mean, it's all of it just coming together. This is mm-hmm. the technocratic biosecurity state where people are going to be monitored and in every aspect of their lives. But it's being sold, of course, under the guise of keeping people healthy and safe. And I think there probably will be a lot of people who will welcome these sort of things. I think we probably all know some people who will be the kind to welcome them in.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree. I think that it's a very clear segue into these things. And I think it's going to be more about the idea that these things don't work properly or don't, you know, where it's all for your safety and it's just not good enough, you know? And so it's going to be the next segue into something else that needs to be more invasive and so on. Just like every other thing we've seen in the way that our governments have progressed in this whole discussion. And, you know, and really remember that even the ones that are on the outside, whether it's a watch or whatever, the whole point is that it's tracked and traced, monitored, right? So whether it's the invasive one or the one that's on your wrist, it's the whole point is still about, you know, it's a privacy issue and it's about your medical information and all these different things. And I think that's where this is a great article that Derek wrote as well that I think really paints this picture of something that we're all beginning to see. And it is very clearly bipartisan. And I think we need to realize that all of this stuff is part and parcel with this whole agenda. Even the election, in my opinion, is all tied in with this agenda going forward. So you want to touch on this one for me, Derek? And this was actually, by the way, part two of something he started before this.
Yeah, that one, that one's an interesting one. It's a little bit long, so I hope everybody will take some time and sit aside with that, because just like all my work, everything is linked. You know, this is more, I would say, where it gets into more of my theory, but it's theory backed by facts, not just things I'm pulling out of my butt. Like, these are things that, like, I think are backed by strong evidence. And I know for some who still have faith in Trump, it's a hard pill to swallow, but this is what I've seen. And like you said, it was part two of a piece that I wrote. I wrote part one in September or November 2016, I think a week or so after Trump got elected, just in the weeks after Trump got elected, before he actually came into office. And this is around the time, of course, when the Russian narrative was just starting, when many of us in independent alternative media were starting to be labeled, you know, Russian disinformation, and there was all these lists circulating about who may or may not, which websites not to trust and all that. And it became very clear to me that, for one, that was going to be used as a way to go after the independent media. And of course, lo and behold, look what's happened in the last 4 years, how they have decimated the, you know, alternative media landscape in so many different ways. But also the, you know, the fake news meme was a big driver of that. And I still do stand by, even more than when I wrote at that time, that Trump's role is to be the great divider. Like, I think that that has been his job, not only to divide, like, say, middle America, mainstream America, but specifically the quote unquote truth movement of people who now, for the last 4 years, have bought into this narrative that Trump is a good guy fighting, you know, the deep state from behind the scenes and trust the plan and all those kinds of things that we've covered before. You know, I saw that coming pretty quickly on, and I put together that piece there, and I think it still stands the test of time. So I felt like, you know what, I want to write a part two of this, of everything that I see is coming, and in the context of the Great Reset, in the context of COVID, in the context of election 2020. And so what I think we're facing here in the next weeks or so, because we're just about a week away from the US presidential election, Whitney has done a great job of covering the various simulations that have been predicted for election 2020, from Cyber Reason to the TIP group to, you know, of course, Dark Winter.
And she's got a new one coming out very soon, by the way, that's on that same track about some more things regarding the election. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and I've got my little mini documentary that hopefully will be out by the time everybody's hearing this, today or tomorrow, on Dark Winter, that covers a lot of the same information from this article. And, you know, the point here is that I think that, as many of us have seen, that COVID is just an excuse to push forward the plans that have been working on since 9/11 and prior to that even. And I think that we're just at a point now where the American people are facing the potential for chaos. We're already seeing the rise in authoritarianism. We've covered that with the parasite stress theory. We've covered how pandemics and the spread of pathogens, whether real or imagined, lead to authoritarian responses from governments, lead to obedience from the people, lead to preference for obedience and shaming of people who don't follow the rituals and things of all that sort. So that stage has already been here, where the authoritarianism is on the rise. People in Australia are locked down. People in different parts of the world are facing, like, real Nazi stuff. And I don't say that in any sort of hyperbole. I mean, they are facing, like, Nazi stormtrooper tactics every day of their life. And at the same time, I mean, just last week, Joe Biden used the Dark Winter phrase, right? I mean, that to me is, like, they're not dropping these phrases just out of the ether. They're not just pulling these out of nowhere. They have a purpose and a point for that. And I wrote about the second wave, you know, the talk of the second wave. I don't know if you know, man, but we're apparently already in a third wave. I don't even know what happened to the second wave, but they're talking about we're in a third wave. So, you know, there's all this stuff, like, is Trump going to leave office, or are the Democrats going to steal the election? You know, and it's kind of back and forth and back and forth. And I can definitely understand why people think that this is just the Democrats trying to steal the election, because the Democrats have said some pretty crazy things. But again, I think that Trump is playing a role. He is at sometimes a wild card. And there are some things that maybe I've been like, hey, that might be better than, you know, a little better than some of the things they might have done. But for me, that's not enough, right? I think ultimately his job, though, is to be a divider, to divide the American people and to keep integrating people back into the left and the right. I can give no greater example of that than last week, whenever he was having the little town hall. I watched some of the clips and I did a video report on that, about how Trump and QAnon keep people trapped in the left-right paradigm. You know, they're asking him point blank, is there a pedophile, you know, network and this and that. Like, you know, if Trump was working for Q or had some secret plan, why not say it right there on national TV to the American people? Yes, there is a predator a predator class. And yes, there is a pedophile cabal, and I am working to take them down. Instead, he says, well, why don't you ask about Antifa? Why don't you talk about, you know, Antifa? Why just keeping people in that left-right paradigm, keeping them right. thinking of like, well, elect me because I'll help stop the guys that you're afraid of. And the other side hears the same thing. If you're afraid of Trump and the rise of fascism, we'll vote for this old guy that can barely keep his head up. You know, it's just keeping people in that same paradigm. And I think that is exactly where they want people to be. They want us to be focusing on the election. They want us to be fighting. And while that's going on, they're sort of dropping these subtle hints of dark winter. And we're seeing the second wave, the third wave, whatever. And there's all these various simulations. As I ended that article, I really tried to make it clear, like, this is not coming from a place of fear. I'm not trying to say, you know, be in a state of panic. It's all about awareness, right? Because I think many of us, knowing what we know now, if we were awake and 9/11 was happening right now, we would be screaming from the rooftops, friends and family, this is a setup. You need to pay attention. A lot of bad things are coming. But many of us weren't awake then yet. Now we are, and we see the pattern that they use simulations before many, many major events, whether it's shootings, false flags. So I don't know for certain that any of this stuff is going to come to pass, but I would rather have done my due diligence of trying to warn people about, hey, here's all the signs I see. Here's all the things that are going on in the background. Inform yourself, you know, go get a little bit of extra food for your family. Do whatever you think you need to do to be prepared for the potential for election chaos. And I will say, man, that I noticed this the other day, part of Cyber Reason, they talk about hackers, right? The mm-hmm. Cyber Reason simulation, for those who are unaware of that, go check out Whitney's articles. They talk about hackers hacking smart vehicles and using them to crash into voters and then hacking the smart grid. Well, just the other day, man, the Louisiana National Guard got called out because they said they're starting to have some hackers, you know, potentially foreign hackers, here we go, hacking the electric grid in Louisiana, parts of Louisiana. So the governor sent out the National Guard. I don't know what the National Guard is going to do. And this was after reports of a similar thing happening in Washington State. I haven't checked today to see if there's any more reports. It could just be some random off occurrence. But my point is, you know, that piqued my alarm went off, like, oh, here we go. Here's some talk of the grid going down and potential hackers hacking it, which was very much what they talked about in the Cyber Reason simulation. So who knows what could be coming in this next week, 2 weeks after that. But we do know for a fact that they have been really selling this idea that on election night, we're not going to know who the next president is. And for the average American who really does place weight in who's president and they have that, like, their personal identity invested in that, that is a sense of kind of chaos and fear for people. Like, what do you mean we don't know who the president is? And they've described that in that 11-week period from the election day to inauguration day in January 20, 2021, that there could be chaos, whether that's protests because people are unhappy with the election or hackers doing this and that. Maybe none of this will come to pass. Maybe this was all just being put out there to keep us in a state of panic and in fear and everything. But again, I would rather have tried to sound some alarm bells and have people at least aware of what could happen. Because at the end of the day, maybe election day comes and passes and it's a traditional change of power. And honestly, I think, Ryan, I was thinking about this. I think that might be more likely even, because think about how big of a fake out would be to get a lot of us truthers and so who are all concerned about this, warning people, hey, this could be coming. And then instead of any big, you know, hubbub, Trump loses and he just passes it to Biden. And then things continue on marching forward like they ever, you know what I mean? It almost serves their purposes more as opposed to some big, like, oh, chaos and this and that, just to keep things going on, right? Because then the Biden people, they breathe a sigh of relief. Oh, okay, cool. We're rid of Trump. Now I don't care if Biden starts wars. I don't care what Biden does, as long as he's not Trump, right? So I don't know that will happen, but I've still kept that in the back of my mind that, you know, maybe it'll end up being, despite all the big, you know, oh my God, what's going to happen? Maybe it ends up being just a traditional old American election and the power marches on, you know, but we have to be prepared for any of the potentials. And that's why I felt the need to write that article. And of course, you know, no, in the context of the Great Reset, I don't think it's just going to go away. You know, I mean, I sort of keep that in the back of my mind, like, maybe they're just going to slowly, incrementally move forward because that serves their purposes. Yet at the same time, they've already gained so much because of COVID-1984. They've already been able to move the ball forward in so many ways. So why wouldn't they run towards the finish line?
Yeah, it's a good point. And it's definitely something to consider. And this is the way that they, you know, the hierarchy enslaving you, plays this kind of game where they do think moves ahead, you know, and it's an interesting thought. But the only reason I would be hesitant to, you know, just be like, maybe not, would be, I feel like they're going to capitalize on this momentum that they have with this Q movement and this, what I think is a clear psyop. I mean, it's, there was actually a funny video today from the, you know, the honest government ads from that Australia.
I saw that.
Yeah. And of course, there are a few things in there where, like, they suggest, like, the plandemic is like a conspiracy theory idea or whatever, but they really do nail the Q scenario.
And they end it with go ahead and vote so you can really change the world. So
yeah. Like, okay. Yeah, right. You know, there are some things that video obviously, you know, doesn't do right, but it's just a funny idea about that Q, you know, manipulation. And by the way, I do, I wanted to point out that I want people to ask, like, why, if you believe that Trump is on your side, why has he not spoken up about the censorship of all the Q people? And that's probably why they rolled out the, we're going to look into Google again. And they go, see, that's what he's doing. You know, and it's just all this planned out illusion, but really he's not there to support. But I would argue that momentum is something that they are clearly capitalizing on. And you're right. Look at how much control they've gained from that. And Q is the group that's, it's funny, the point they make in the article, it's like they're screaming about martial law and then martial law finally comes. And they're like, yay, you know, and it's like, it doesn't make any sense. But so I it's an interesting thing. And I think we should all hope for less chaos. But I also wanted to point out the idea that the National Guard being brought in, I think that's clearly signifying that they're not worried about the whatever will happen because of the cyber attack. They were there. It's about the reactions of people. That's mm-hmm. what they're concerned about. They're controlling us. That's always absolutely what that's been about, you know? Now I know we may be a little bit short on time. We went longer than we expected in the beginning. So you just let me know if you've got to hop off, but I figured we could jump through a couple of other of the points in regard to some things I had for daily wrap up discussions. And sure, this sure ties in with the Great Reset in general to start off, just the way this is all evolving. And remember, guys, for everything we've already talked about, the numbers are coming out now, even from the World Health Organization, showing us that this is dramatically less severe than they first started out, if not about the flu. And that's coming from these very same groups that we're supposed to be aligned with, you know? And this is showing you in this video, which is just crazy, from Sky News, non-essential items have been sealed off in supermarkets, plastic wrapped, in Wales amid government's new coronavirus restrictions. Apparently even clothing is now deemed non-essential. I mean, just, it's just incredible. Just jump in, Derek, if you want to say anything about this stuff. I mean, it's just, this is staggering to me that they're now, based on things that are not even really there, according to the data, like the deaths just aren't really there. They're
It's crazy to me, man, because this is all preparation for the third wave, right? Again, which I don't even, like, I asked somebody, like, oh, the third wave supposedly happened in July and August. And I just actually got back from the grocery store a little bit earlier today. I'm back in the US for a couple of days. And so I've kind of getting to see what it's like back in here in Houston, where my family's from. And I went to the grocery store with my mother, and I was pointing to my mom, like, how many of the grocery shelves are starting to be emptied out again. And I think that these kinds of things, roping off certain items, and it's all clearly about just controlling what people can have access to.
Right.
And, you know, our friend Ice Age Farmer, he's been doing a great job keeping track of the food supply and how much the, you know, quote unquote COVID has caused a disruption to the food supply and to the chain of supply. But clearly in this case, there are products there available for people to purchase if they weren't wrapped in plastic wrap, you know, because, and it's just, it's clearly, like you said, with the National Guard, it's clearly about focusing on the people, not keeping them safe.
I found it very telling. If you notice, the one thing that doesn't seem to be restricted in this case is seemingly the Halloween stuff. Isn't that telling? Right. It's all the consumerism. We can't get rid of that. Right. Hold on. Like the costumes, but where was it? It just showed, you can see all the Halloween right here. That's not roped off. That's not covered, right? That's just so classic. Our consumerism, can't get rid of that. I think the wave thing is such an interesting point, right? I mean, 15 days to flatten the curve, right, turned into 8 months, right? But they told us at that time that you're referencing that that wasn't a second wave, that we hadn't gotten over the first. That was, they were saying that on the media. And now they'll point back to it and be like, oh, that was the second. It's just like, there's just no rhyme or reason to anything that they're doing with all of this. Now, this was just a point of, a British store is using AI to track people as they walk in the store in order to decide whether or not, whether you get a green sign or you get a red sign if you're wearing a mask, and it decides for you. Say, if you don't have a mask, all of a sudden they go, stops you and says, you can't come in. Right. I mean, this is crazy. It's just a kind of, and first of all, recognize that there are medical exemptions even here. And look, that's what it even says. It says, unless you've got a medical exemption, but they're not, that's not deciding. How do they know? They're going to, it even tells the people in the store to take notice of this person. So what happens when they come over and they start getting aggressive and they go, why aren't you wearing a mask? I mean, they even note there's an exemption and they don't care about that. I don't think it has anything to do with health or anything other. It's about compliance. Well, I do actually myself think it's about getting people more sick. I truly believe that.
Yeah, I definitely think that they're trying to keep people sick and get people to have other illnesses and things. I mean, even if it's, I think I've heard you mention it before, that as simple as, because I know my partner, she's occasionally had to wear a mask to go do some of her work and things like that. And of course, she hates it. But she started to notice, like, even just as simple as getting...
Yeah, face rash.
Like rashes and things on her cheek and, you know, just on the side of her face from wearing the thing and from the condensation, just whatever else. Like,
yeah,
it clearly is about control, man. I mean, and this, you know, it talks about the AI, using AI to detect who's wearing the mask when they're coming in out of the store. Those same companies that we were going over just a little bit earlier, again, they're all working on AI algorithms, computer programs and software. So there's no, it's not like it would be unheard of for these companies to be selling software to governments, contracting with them, and then that same technology making it to the grocery stores, making it elsewhere, so that as soon as you come in the store, not only are they going to be making sure you have a face mask on, but they're going to be scanning your biology. Like, oh, right. Wait, hold on. We got somebody with a raised temperature in aisle 7. So exactly. Send in the bio, whatever guard over there.
It's crazy. This is I'm just bringing this up for reference, because what we're talking about is a mask that this is not a question, right? This is there's no other random controlled trials. This is about cloth masks, which most people are wearing, that I have shown 1,000 times, the first, and as far as I could tell, only random controlled trial of cloth masks specifically. And it says very clearly, moisture retention, reuse cloth masks, and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection. That is a general statement from the National Library of Medicine, from the National Institutes of Health. No one else has challenged this. They just pretend like it's not there. It says rates of all infection outcomes were highest in cloth masks, and the rate of influenza-like illness statistically significantly higher in the control with the cloth mask arm controlled with medical masks. But get this, cloth masks also significantly higher in regard to the control arm. So cloth mask versus no mask at all, and you have a higher risk of infection. That's incredible to me. And also, I like always like to point out that it shows you that 97% of the time, according to the study from the NIH, the National Library of Medicine, that 97% even the droplets get through. That's right there. I mean, it's even medical masks are 44%, right?
And you've been doing a great job, dude, keeping track of all these various studies. I really want to applaud you on that. And I do think that's one of the reasons you've faced so much censorship, because I mean, and I don't know if you saw today the thing about the Danish study that's also been kind of, people don't want to talk about that. I don't know if you saw that one right this morning. But you know, it's like we got doctors out there trying to say, hey, maybe the masks, you know, aren't as good as we've been told. And not to mention, as you've shown, that we already have years worth of research on that. It's not like people are just suddenly discovering like, hey, these masks don't do what people are claiming. The information has been out there. And whenever doctors are trying to report on it, now they can't even find a publisher willing to put it out there.
Exactly. I do believe I have that up somewhere in here. We can just fly through these. We were just other videos of the Great Reset showing you that, you know, we've talked about this on the show, for those that remember that, you know, you'll owe nothing. You'll be happy 2030, right? You're beholden to the government in every possible way, and you don't even own your house or your clothes or your car. You just trade it off with people. Like, that's the world that they're telling you you're going to be, they're building. And look, every statistic and everything you look at tells you it's going the other direction. There's a reason that things like storage units are a $1 billion industry, because people don't want to get rid of anything. You know, it's they're pushing this on us, and that's the scary part about all of it. And the video just kind of goes over the, you know, the weird future they're going to show you that you're going to be living in, you know?
Yeah.
Eva Bartlett points this out too, and you've seen this, you know, and she says, you know, stop being so subtle about it. You know, it's
like, I was just about to ask if you saw that. Somebody just sent that to me earlier today. And yeah, it's titled, it's 2023. Here's how we fix the global economy. And I mean, even just the pictures alone, when you look into the images and stuff, of course, like there's a giant vaccine on one of them. They're putting their, if you don't mind, if I could share my screen for just a second.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to mention two things about the Great Reset. Because I do have to go in just a few moments, but I did want to add to that. So let me make sure this is the right one. So here's the one that, this is the actual cover of the Time thing right here. So 2023, here's how we fix the global economy. Of course, on the left, it's all COVID and nasty, ugly world we used to live in. And here's the beautiful, wonderful world. And like I said, vaccine front and center, COVID-19 vaccine. That's how we'll transition to that new world.
Am I reading too much into the idea that the vaccine seems to be crossing over both sides? Is that just
No, I think, no, absolutely. I think that we know that these people work in symbolism, and that's kind of what I wanted to get into. I hadn't even really looked into it, but see, this would be something that piques my interest. You see, as I scroll down at the top here, it says the Great Reset in partnership with Sampo Holdings. I don't know who that is, but it would be interesting to know who they are and why they're partnering with them, because I wrote an article for TLAV a couple of months ago about the Great Reset, and that was the sort of the precursor to my big one about Trump and, you know, the establishment's plan to divide. But I decided recently to go back down that rabbit hole, and I found some new information. Like, I'll just share briefly. The Great Reset now actually has its own website. It had previously only had a website on the World Economic Forum website. Let me see, maybe it's actually just Great Reset. And so I thought that was like, okay, the World Economic Forum is just going to host their own little mini website, but there actually is greatreset.com. Here you go.
Right. I was just looking at this.
Yeah. And, but it's, so when I looked at it, because I spent a lot of time on the World Economic Forum, for one, the branding, the coloring, everything's totally different. So I was like, okay, maybe they just went with a different, you know, marketing campaign or strategy. But you can search this entire website and read every single thing like I did. There's not a single mention of the World Economic Forum. Hmm. I thought that was interesting. I was like, okay, so how is this like connected to the World Economic Forum?
Yeah.
Well, it clearly is, because the terminology, and look, here's all the interesting symbolism that they use.
Right.
They have a social media kit for you to post to all your friends. And this thing is clearly just telling people that, like, hey, you know, we've been doing nothing by staying home and it's saving the planet. So let's keep doing nothing. Let's stop flying, you know, commit to stop driving, you know, bike more, things that, like, they try to take things that sound generally like good. Yeah. More biking. And
by
know,
the way, that's in fact not actually the case, by the way, even in regard to pollution and everything, like the amount of masks and plastics and nonsense, it's actually worse. And there, a lot of people are trying to call that out.
I agree with you. So look, here's just one example. Good work, people. Since the lockdown, everything's going green. Keep it up. You know, even this, like, bump your elbow here. We'd love to shake you by the hand or give you a big old bear hug, but we can't. And, you know, and then here's the thing. This house is no longer, go ahead and write down, we're no longer eating meat, or we're no longer whatever it is that you want to. And they're using this hashtag create the reset. Huh. So I've spent hours and hours on this website. Here's another one. In 2020, you broke a bad habit by not flying during COVID. Let's keep it up. You know, so it's all about promoting people to stay home. Don't go anywhere, you know, give up your life. But yeah, no mention of the World Economic Forum at all. Then you get down here, the Great Reset is brought to you by Purpose Disruptors. This was created through a unique collaborative process led by Purpose Disruptors through a series of virtual events, volunteers, yada, yada. So I started looking into them, looked onto their Instagram account and some of the other things that they're involved. And essentially, this is just a collection. It was founded by three different people who all have a history in marketing and advertising. And they were actually promoting this before the Great Reset was. If they are connected to the Great Reset, they do not acknowledge it officially. The World Economic Forum makes no mention of a group called Purpose Disruptors, which I thought was really odd. Like, again, why would these companies not make, just like, if there's a clear connection, like, hey, the World Economic Forum hired this ad agency to do a really cool, trendy, you know, program for us. But instead, they don't even mention each other. So I started to look into Purpose Disruptors. And here's a tweet I put out a week or so ago. And there was a UK organization called Mindshare, and they were hosting the co-founders of Purpose Disrupt. And at that, this was apparently the first time that the Great Reset was ever mentioned, back in May 2020. And it says that the founders delivered an inspiring session on their campaign, The Great Reset. They haven't even been using the hashtag at that point. They were calling it Change the Brief. That was the sort of precursor to the Great Reset. They were calling on the marketing and advertising industry, basically using Edward Bernays' tactics and saying, hey, we have the power to influence people's thinking. We have the power to shape, you know, the way people are going to live their lives. Why don't we start doing that in a responsible way? And so again, this is back from May 14, and this Lisa Merrick Lawless and Jonathan Wise, they're two of the co-founders of Purpose Disruptors. And I did start digging into them. Jonathan Wise, he's part of another thing called the World Resources Council, which connects back to the Bill and Melinda Gates. You know, tangentially, there's no like real hard direct connections, but it seems like they're coming from the same swamp, I guess you could say. And this is their thing. It says, because marketing and advertisers are systemic amplifiers, we have the added responsibility to decide what kind of society we want to promote. Sure. So it was basically calling on them and all their ad buddies and marketing buddies to start using their their work to promote this, create the brief, and now they're calling it create the reset. And like, again, they have 600 followers on Twitter. They don't seem to be anybody that's well known or anything, but they're clearly involved in the promotion of the Great Reset. And when I scrolled through their Twitter campaign, you just see a lot of the same imagery. And I do think there's some symbolism here that's really important when you start looking into a lot of the messaging that they're putting in. They had like a big competition encouraging people about it. And they promote like, oh, look, the Guardian ran a full page ad, you know, saying, like here's a billboard announcing the Great Reset. Like, so they're definitely working, like this one proudly supported by Clear Channel. They're working with some big companies to get their advertising out there, promoting the Great Reset, trying to create some trendy marketing campaign. But I just find it so interesting that there's no mention, direct mention of the World Economic Forum. And it's almost as if they're, you know, at least they're trying to appear as if they're operating independently and it's not some coordinated thing. And I will say, I talked with another researcher who had kind of gone down this rabbit hole. We cannot find who Purpose Disruptors is funded by. They're a private, like equity held firm. They're founded by three founders, but there's no information about, you know, grants or any of this kind of stuff. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's coming from Gates or somebody like that. I don't have direct evidence of that, but it's just so weird. Like, it's like these two things are existing independently, the World Economic Forum, Great Reset, and then this advertising agency promoting Create the Reset, you know, Great Reset. But they make no mention of each other. So I do think that for anybody who's listening, who wants to do some digging, that finding out more about who Purpose Disruptors is and who funds them could give us a little bit more clarity.
Yeah. I put it out there on the show. When I mentioned it, I just said, you know, find out, guys, look into it. So hopefully somebody, you know, out there continues to look. It is very interesting. I find it almost impossible to believe that they're not, but I find it weird, interesting that the meme you showed up there, they're basically admitting what we've always been saying, but because now they're saying they're doing it in a good way, that it's not a problem. Like, they're using their advertising and their clout to just direct people's opinions. I mean, isn't that exactly what we've been screaming about for a year? Like, look at what they're doing. They're you know, doing it in more nefarious ways behind the scenes to promote the wars or whatever. But it's like, well, now because we're doing it for good things, we can just blatantly say it. I mean, I find that incredible. But I wanted to add that there's a group, it's probably a no connection, but I still found it relevant to my mind. And, you know, there's always something when these things connect. There's a group called Disrupt that was working. I read an article about biohackers in regard to the, you know, the implantable chips are coming. It was this article talking about how that's our future, of course, very new article. And this guy was like a biohacker, he called himself, and he started a group called Disrupt. I just find it interesting that their project, was it Project Disrupt or was it
Purpose Disruptors?
Purpose Disruptors. It's just like, interesting, you know, but nonetheless, but are you going to jump off or you want to hang out?
I got to get going. Okay. Unfortunately, I appreciate you having me on today, man, though.
Yeah. Always a pleasure, brother. I love speaking with you. So we need to do this more often. So go ahead and jump off and we'll keep talking on some stuff.
All right, brother. Well, thank you. And yeah, I just want to remind everybody who, you know, appreciate the support, especially during my censorship, keep supporting T-Lab. And anybody who's interested in seeing my work who maybe hasn't in the past, you can visit theconsciousresistance.com. And I'm definitely looking for any helpful volunteers who want to help me fix 8 years worth of broken YouTube links on my website, because that's what I'll be trying to put some extra energy in. And maybe in a few weeks we can talk again so I can share some more about the Pyramid of Power documentary, because you're going to be a part of that. Corbett's going to be a part of that. G. Edward Griffin and a few other people that I'll hopefully be able to announce soon. And I would definitely love to share that with the audience.
Yeah. Count on it, brother. That'll happen for sure. So thanks and I'll include all that stuff for everybody in the show notes. His website, you got to check out his website. Make sure you're supporting him there. So thanks for being here, brother.
All right, man. Thank you.
So we'll keep going on some stuff here, guys. Let's just get into a couple more things just to kind of rattle off the last points that we were going to kind of just touch on at the end here in general. But I want to reiterate very strongly that it's so important that you go to the Conscious Resistance, that you go to the Last American Vagabond, you go to the CorbettReport.com or whatever other website of people you support, go to their websites, support them at the source. Has to happen today. Just really never been more important. Now, in the interest of time, since this has been already long, I'm just going to rattle off a few more points to finish off here, which I know you guys already know translates into me saying that and then doing what I'm going to do anyway. So let's get into it. Now, this is a point that Whitney Webb shared in regard to what we were already talking about. And remembering we're coming off the discussion of the Great Reset and you know all the other points that we're talking about in regard to not just mass, but just the idea of what they're lying to you about and how it's building what they're talking about and how, you know, at least the Trump's administration, well, arguably, I guess all of them at this point are kind of saying the China bad guy, right? China's the one that didn't. They didn't let us know and blah, blah, blah. Well, here's an interesting tie-in, especially remember that the vaccine they're saying they're working on is using material that was scraped from lungs of someone in China, and yet we're trusting them that that's the right? That totally makes sense, right? That's Trump's vaccine that they're working on, right? And I say Trump's vaccine to make a point. It's just the vaccine, the same one they said was Fauci and Gates that were going to kill us all. And now the same people are supporting the vaccine again because they're now, you know, for the first time because Trump decided to back it. It just didn't make sense. But remember that China's the one that didn't let us know, and we're accusing them of doing this and insinuating that this was all a big plan, which may be true. but then trusting that the material that they've used and said was COVID-19 that they've never actually isolated, which I'll show you again in a moment, is now okay to use the vaccine for freedom. Right. No logic, guys. That's all this stuff is. If you're in the two-party illusion, you tend to just kind of ignore the lack of logic in these points. But as this person pointed out, seems like the tech companies are working together. The Saudi Authority for Data and Artificial Intelligence on Thursday signed a memorandum of understanding with IBM, Alibaba, and Huawei. Wait a minute. How does that make sense? I thought Saudi Arabia was a staunch ally of the United States, but they're working with artificial intelligence with China, which is which, as Whitney Webb points out in previous work, is like the obvious point of leapfrogging. They don't want China to leapfrog, and or however they frame that the U.S. has to be better than China in AI. But here's Saudi authority doing seemingly the opposite of that. And as Whitney pointed out, well, yeah, the NatSec AI, national security, artificial intelligence people in the U.S. were debating whether to leapfrog or work with China to build the digital panopticon. It seems pretty clear where things are going if IBM, all tied up with US Intel, is teaming up with Huawei. So China bad guy, China didn't let us know, turns into we're working with them to build the new world order. Good times. Just got to start paying attention, ladies and gentlemen. It's all right in front of you. Now here's a point that I mentioned with Dr. Mikovits that I really wanted to read thoroughly before I discussed, because there's a lot going on here. And the points that Dr. Mikovits was making on the show is a point to be made here. And even by the title, as you can see, that, and I argue though, that this title in and of itself is very clearly burying the lead as I see it. But Judicial Watch, Fauci emails show World Health Organization entity pushing for a press release, especially supporting China's response to coronavirus. But see, this is meant to be, you know, Fauci, 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 it's all Fauci, Fauci did it. But remember, Fauci is part of NIAID, which is part of NIH, which is controlled by HHS, which is controlled by Donald Trump, or rather the president at the time, right? So if this is happening, you could always argue that this was happening independent of his awareness, but it doesn't change the fact that he's the president, he's responsible for what's happening, because that's what real leaders do. The same reason that these things happened under Obama's time frame become Obama's fault, we should ask why when it happens in Trump's time frame that it's not Trump's fault. Or even if you want to make Fauci out to be an Obama holdover, it doesn't change the fact that funding had continued, which we'll show you in a moment, or maybe I will. The point is that funding continued. Oh yeah, I will show you in a moment. I forgot. I had that saved. That the Trump administration was funding Wuhan labs and other labs all the way up into 2020. That was acknowledged. That wasn't some secret thing that Fauci did behind the scenes. This was a continued trot that had to go through the checks, the people above them, right? So that's something to understand. But in this case, when you're talking about him supporting the response, remember at the time where they're pointing the emails where Fauci is supporting the response, that was exactly the time when Trump was also saying the same thing, by the way, which he didn't even disagree with when Biden said it during the debate, because he didn't. He had no reason to disagree with it because he did say that. You could argue he was mistaken or wrong or deceived, and that makes sense. I'm not arguing otherwise. But Trump said that they were very transparent and China was doing a good job at this exact time frame. So I don't find it to be much of a bombshell that Fauci was saying the same thing. Unless you want to argue, which is possible, that Fauci was the very one deceiving Trump, and that's why he changed his mind. That's all possible. But the point is, none of this is solid as they try to make it out to be. But let's go through a couple of these points. Judicial Watch announced today that it and the Daily Caller News Foundation received from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, 300 pages of emails from Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, NIAID. That's how I say it anyway. People say it differently. NIAID, just harder to say, including his approval of a press release supportive of China's response. That seems to be the focal point here, right? So I don't really see that being a standout, and you'll see what I mean as we go through it, because recognize that that's exactly what Trump said at the same time when this email says Fauci was approving of their response, which, by the way, nobody should be okay with. Their response was horrific. Their response was a next level authoritarian control mechanism, which is essentially building slowly here. That should not be okay. And by arguing that what they're saying here is not what they try to make it out to be, at least as I see it, does not mean that I'm defending China's response or China at all. That's just a lazy argument, people that want to try to make that the case because I go after facts they don't like you to talk about. But this is on January 27, 2020, the World Health Organization, the World Bank, convened Global Preparedness Monitoring Board. Remember, the World Bank has had a few tie-ins with this whole thing, more than one. The following day, or rather just so the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, January 27, 2020. So the World Health Organization is setting up a Global Preparedness Monitoring Board in regard to COVID-19. on January 27th. Now, understand that at the time, and still technically at this moment, but that's, you know, to be seen as we go forward, the U.S. government was the one of the leading sponsors, funders, if not the, I believe, of the World Health Organization, which means, as this works, that the World Health Organization used predominantly their personnel. That's how it works. So that means that there were people tied to the U.S. government that were part of this whole thing, that knew at this time that this was happening. So you can't argue that China didn't let us know when you had personnel there that knew exactly what was going on. And you'll see as we go forward, it says call for urgent actions, the GPMB, which is the monitoring board, to further strengthen global preparedness and response to the outbreak. So again, they're talking about the outbreak. They're talking about the strengthening their preparedness and their response. And yet we're pretending that China didn't let us know, that we had no idea this was happening. It doesn't make sense. The lawsuit was filed after HHS failed to respond to April 1st, 2020 FOIA requests from the DCNF. And this is in regard to getting this information. I should have just read the whole paragraph. It says the emails were produced in response to a Judicial Watch Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, right? Now it says it was after HHS failed to respond. Now that is also a little sticky part for this narrative, because HHS is a group that's tied very closely to the federal government and to the rather specifically the Trump administration or whatever administration's in the White House. We know that people like Robert Kadlec or people like Alex Azar or any of these individuals that are clearly tied to Trump's administration, tied to the coronavirus task force, are the people that are not somebody that you can just lump in with saying, you know, Fauci bad guy. I mean, I think all of these people are back on HHS, all of them, the NIH. These are some sketchy characters. But the HHS is a group that doesn't usually get mentioned in regard to the Gates Fauci bad guy side, because obvious reasons, because it's clearly connected to the president and his administration. All of these are, by the way, but it's just more, as I said, the kind of chain of command, right? The HHS is over NIH, which is over NIAID, and HHS is reporting to the president. So in this case, when HHS fails to respond to give the emails of the bad guy Fauci, as we're told, how does that make sense? Is the Trump administration hiding the emails of Dr. Fauci, which seemed to be the argument, that the opposite of what they're arguing? The point to see here is that it doesn't make sense. And it only makes sense when you realize that they're all on the same team. Communications between Dr. Fauci and Deputy Director Lane and World Health Organization officials concerning the novel coronavirus. These are things they wanted in this lawsuit. Communications of Dr. Fauci, Deputy Director Lane concerning WHO, WHO official Bruce Alward, and Tedros, the general director. Now, it says, and Collins responds on January 30th, saying the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board convened on January 27th to discuss the current outbreak, which was first detected in China and is now quickly spreading internationally. That is from the NIH reaching out to the World Health Organization, which is a public email now, which says that they were well aware on January 27th that this was happening, that it was coming from China, and that it was spreading internationally. So there is no way that you can now argue that they didn't let us know, because they're clearly showing you right here that this was an exchange of information from the World Health Organization, which had American personnel involved, and the NIH, not just NIA, but NIH, which Collins heads, not Fauci, who is sending letters saying, we know this is happening, we know it's spreading internationally, and we know everything. So can we please acknowledge that Trump is lying to us when they say China didn't let us know, and that was why they didn't do anything between February and seemingly March, or whatever the time frame is, it all blends together now, that they just didn't really take action? Because I argue the actions they took and the ones they didn't were all designed to lead us to a situation that creates more potential problems. At least that's how it ended up, whether or not that's the intention. Every action they took has made things worse. Now it says on February 1st, WHO emailed Fauci to let him know the WHO was organizing a global research partners forum, suggesting he might think about funding and or undertaking research on this new viral outbreak, which, by the way, has to be checked by all the people I mentioned above them, NIH, HHS, and so on. There's a chain of command, ladies and gentlemen. Fauci just doesn't pull money out of his pocket and go give it to China. I mean, there's ways that could happen. But understand that this is funding that has been going through the same old rigmarole that Trump funded it as through his administration all the way to 2020. And then when it became noticed and pointed and talked about, well, then it ought to have suddenly stopped, right? But remember, May 1st is when that happened. Trump admin pulls NIH grant for coronavirus research over ties to Wuhan. And by the way, remember, left all the other ones. So if China bad guy was doing this research and we don't want to fund it, why did they only stop the funding to Wuhan and let about six or seven other labs continue the same research in China funded by the US government? No one wants to answer that question. I wonder why. Because they're trying to trick you guys. They're trying to fool you into thinking that they're not on the same side. That it's all the Trump saving the world and it's all going to be the same. By the way, the same kind of ploy they tried to use with Obama and different people for him. Hope and change, right? It's all going to be fixed. Nope. Not unless we do something about it. But it says the government, and this is a quote, is now ever so slowly complying with the law and letting the American people know in regard to the emails coming out how they did business with the WHO and China at the outset of this pandemic, according to the Daily Caller. Now, remember, we're talking about the Trump administration, who did business with the WHO and China when this was going on in the beginning. And that's stuff that's coming out from these emails, right? It's talking about $8 billion. I mean, I hope you will read through this for yourself. And the emails, by the way, which I'm not going to go through all of them, there's a lot going on here. But if you want to make this only a point about Fauci and approving of China, that seems wildly deceptive to me, whether that's intentional or not. There's a lot more information in here applied to the bigger story that seems to be very relevant that they're burying under the argument that it's Fauci only and China did it, which this seems to actually contradict. He says, we are grateful to Judicial Watch for helping us force the government to do its job. The government, not just Republicans, not just Democrats, but the whole damn thing, which is where it always comes back to. It says, these Fauci emails show how praising China was the odd priority of the WHO in the face of novel and dangerous coronavirus. Now, that's according to Judicial Watch and Tom Fitton, which seems that there's a clear intention behind making that the focus here. Now, you can argue that this is clearly Judicial Watch in and of itself seems to be a pro-Trump kind of idea. I think Judicial Watch does a fantastic job because it's about FOIA information requests. So regardless of the intention, it's all very usable information. So in this case, when it's focused on that, I think it's interesting that praising China, by the way, which Trump did at the same time frame. So why is this a bombshell? I don't really know. It just shows you that that did happen, and it's interesting. So you take it for what you will. It says that the NIH tried to slow roll the release of the emails and is sitting on thousands more. Now, that right there, you go, oh, that's NIH. That's scandalous, and it is. But then you find out that HHS has also said that Fauci must personally review each one of them before they can even be released. So now why is the HHS protecting this? That seems to challenge the whole thing, that it's only Fauci, right? See, none of this makes sense if you're just smart enough to look beyond the two-party narratives. Hopefully that's clear, that that is still happening. And all this stuff is tied to all of them, not just one side or the other. Now, going to masks for a minute, just roll through these points. As we were mentioning before, there is a never-ending stream of people right now who are coming out and just telling you the reality. Right? I'm not even going to say that I'm not even going to argue right now, even though you already know my opinion. Regardless of my opinion, this is another doctor, another medical doctor, another medical professional, another expert in the field of medicine standing up and telling you his opinion about masks, and that has to be acceptable. No matter what you think about them, no matter what you think, whether he's wrong or whatever your intentions or whatever you want to say about his past or what he did when he was 15 or, you know, he's a bad person. It's not about that. It's about the content of the argument. And he's a medical expert and has the right to speak on it. I mean, I made this point the other day in regard to Dr. Judy Mikovits. I think about how crazy it is that people are trying to say, she's been accused of this and she did this and she was arrested and she faked that, all the claims from the people that don't want you to look at her information. Now, There's a story behind all of that, which she makes very clear, which shows you that there was a lot of politics involved with the why they attacked her. Now, whether you agree with that or not, it doesn't matter. The content of the argument is what matters. Then they jump into the next part where they go, where's her source material? Why isn't she showing you? I mean, what do you expect her to do as somebody on an interview? You think she's going to be just holding up her documents and going, and right here, oh, and then here's the other one. It says it right there, right? Does that happen on Fox News? That happen on CNN when they bring people out and they're experts? Do they pull up their document material and walk you through where it's at? No, of course not. They just take them at their word because they're their experts on mainstream media. But now because another expert who they say is not, who they don't agree with, speaks up and says something, they just have this whole new realm of how it's supposed to go. The reality is she's an expert, has a right to speak on these things. You can disagree with her, but you can't pretend that because they'd say that she's no longer what she actually is, that she's just simply no longer that. She's a medical professional and has a right to give her opinion because she's educated on these things. Again, you could argue she's wrong, but to pretend that it's just not valid is your problem. And that's what they try to do. But she didn't show her material, despite the fact that I sourced and cited everything in the document that before we put the video out. But see, they don't do the due diligence. They've already decided that Judy's this or that. And so they just bleat about what they were told to say. That's just pathetic. Do your due diligence, people. Be an adult and actually look at the information and come to your own conclusions about it. But so here, the same point. We're looking at another doctor who says by wearing a mask, the exhaled viruses will not be able to escape and will concentrate in the nasal passages, enter the olfactory nerves. The olfactory is your smell, your nose, and travel into the brain. That is a doctor telling you that. It's just incredible to me that I hope you will read this. I'll probably come back to these so I can go into them more in depth. But this is where we are, where even experts telling you what their opinion is not allowed if it challenges the narrative. Now remember that even when the World Health Organization itself came out and slightly deviated from the lockdown discussion, they attacked that person. But I thought we weren't supposed to challenge World Health Organization guidelines. Oh, but it's okay if they do it, if they don't like what the World Health Organization says. So they're just disgusting, ridiculous hypocrites. Yeah, exactly. Now here's another discussion in regard to something that I just was hearing discussed in regard to people doing flight school and being told that they can't wear masks because it causes dizziness. Right, so you can't be flying a plane and being taught how to fly with a mask in the COVID era because it causes dizziness and that's dangerous. Does that make sense? Oh, but that's fake news when it happens anywhere else, right? Well, here's an interesting thing. I decided to look into this a little bit more and found that in April of this, during this coronavirus scandal, that they're weirdly starting to kind of subtly bring this up under the scene and realize what this shows you. College flight schools adapt new learning environments. So they go on to talk about how we're going to start making them wear masks because of COVID-19 and blah, blah, blah. And then they really subtly put in, well, there is also plans to research mask fatigue, a phenomenon that requires further study, but could coincide with extended face mask use. You know why that's disgusting? Because there's been a lot of studies about mask fatigue, just like there's a lot of studies about masks. And they keep going, we need more research to find out whether or not. There's 100 studies, so many random controlled trials about the efficacy of masks. And they just want another one because they don't like what it says. The point is, mask fatigue, the idea that they cause dizziness or issues with hypoxemia or breathing are very, 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 very well documented, coming directly from the NIH. And so when they pretend like this is some new thing, think about how dangerous it is to argue that you're making people who are flying planes with people in the plane wear a mask that might cause dizziness or even something else more severe, and then pretend like it's something we know about, but we're not too certain about. So we're going to go ahead and let them wear it until we look into it further. Is what happened to erring on the side of caution? Oh, I see, because forcing people to wear masks is the agenda at all costs. So we'll allow some potential airplane crashes just to make sure that we sell you on that narrative. But here's the point. Oh, we're going to look into the mask fatigue idea because it's this new thing we never heard of? Well, not really. Mask fatigue is something that's been around. This is another discussion talking about it. Mask fatigue is the new obstacle facing Americans. Wait, didn't you just say that it wasn't even certain? Well, here it is. As it gets warmer, the more humid, which by the way, doesn't actually make sense because it's the cold air that causes your breath to, you know when it's cold and you breathe out, you can see your breath, right? So when you're breathing out cold during the winter time, it's going to collect in your mask. It's going to create moisture. And like I said a moment ago, it is going to increase the risk of infection, as it says right there. Moisture retention, reuse of cloth masks, and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection. Significantly higher rate of influenza-like illness from a mask to no mask. That's incredible. This is, again, from the National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health. But we're fake news though, right? Well, as it gets warmer, they say, some say wearing a mask causing shortness of breath, even anxiety. Wait a minute. I thought that wasn't even allowed to be discussed. Shortness of breath and anxiety, is that even possible if it's not supposed to be happening and affecting your breath? If it's not supposed to be affecting the oxygen in your blood and all the things they keep screaming about, but then they come out and go, oh, well, because we have to slowly seed the idea that this is causing a problem and then act like we begin to deal with it instead of admitting right off the bat that we knew all along this was something that it would cause. It says Dr. Chris Branner says these effects are known as mask fatigue. Wait a minute. Now it's just known as something that you already know of that's been existing from a long time ago, but didn't they just tell us right here that it's something that I'm just now figuring out and looking into? Like, it's so disgustingly obvious how clear these people are trying to deceive you. It says sometimes the elastic can be too tight or the cloth mask can be too thick, making it harder to breathe. So mask fatigue depends on the type of mask you're wearing and how it's set up. But wait, I thought it wasn't even possible. Now they're sort of just saying, well, it is, but only with certain kinds. But we're not going to get into that necessarily. So it just changed from there's no negative health effects whatsoever to now, yeah, there are some, but certain kinds in certain places. How much you want to bet another month, it'll be, yeah, there's a problem, and now we have to deal with it. Now only use this kind of mask because we figure out that we all said this in the very beginning. These things are causing rashes. They're causing mask mouth, as any dentist will tell you, cracking teeth, rashes, pneumonia, infections. Bacterial pneumonia is being on the rise just because you're wearing a mask. By the way, which has almost the exact same symptoms of COVID-19. What do you know? I wonder if the mask may be the primary factor on what's causing whatever they think they're finding. I was also seeing reports of people who were taking the COVID test and not even taking the test, just having the test, opening the package, putting the swab right in the thing, closing it and sending it back. I've seen numerous videos of this and coming back saying they're positive. I've seen examples of people taking the swab and testing a puddle outside, as the guy was talking about, and putting it back in and coming back positive. Why aren't we asking these questions? It says the doctor suggests investing in not wearing a mask because it may be dangerous, but no, just buying more of them. Yeah, that's the solution. Does that sound like a logical solution to a mask maybe causing problems? Buying more of them? It's like investing in a variety of masks for different situations. For example, a thicker mask can be worn when in public spaces like grocery and hardware stores, but for situations where you're not expected to be around crowds, thinner masks are acceptable. So wait, are they literally telling you that it's okay to wear a mask that's thinner, that has less effectiveness? Because none of this is logical at all. Not even remotely. But they want you to think that it's okay. Keep wearing it no matter what. Who cares if you're passing out? Who cares if it's causing your teeth to crack? Just keep doing it because it's what we told you makes you safe. And here's another example. Combating the effects of mask wearing. Well, wait a minute. I thought there were no mask wearing effects. Didn't you say that it's completely safe? A doctor told my brother verbatim that there's nothing wrong with wearing a mask. Zero health side effects. That's quickly coming out. This is an obvious lie. It says improper breathing while wearing a surgical cloth mask. Okay. So now it's your fault again. You get that? It's your fault. It's not the mask's fault. It's not COVID's fault. It's not the government's lockdown's fault. No, no, no. It's because you're just not breathing properly while wearing your mask. Doesn't that make sense? Improper breathing while wearing a surgical or cloth mask have been shown to create anxiety, headaches, increased heart rate, dizziness, and fatigue. So is it improper breathing or is it the fact that you're wearing a mask? This is the dumbest thing I have ever seen. Look, let's go. I have to show these again. I know I go back to these constantly, but it's so incredibly important to do so. I have them up over here. These are the links about the mask studies, which are literally showing you exactly what that is saying. I mean, it's actually unbelievable how clear this stuff is. Let's see if I get the right one first. I mean, these are studies. Again, same thing, PubMed, National Library of Medicine. It says, exercising with face masks may reduce available oxygen, increasing air trapping, preventing substantial carbon dioxide exchange, otherwise known as breathing. The hypercapnia, hypoxia may potentially increase acidic environment, cardiac overload, and on and on and on, right? I mean, I have five that I reference quite frequently, but there's many more than that. The physiological impact of wearing an N95 mask during hemodialysis. And again, and this is specifically N95, but there's numerous from 2020 to 2004 showing you that this has the effect that they pretend it does not. 70% of the patients showed a reduction in partial oxygen pressure, right? PO2. I mean, it's exactly, and this says 20% developed varying degrees of hypoxemia. This is exactly what they're pretending is not happening. Wait, it's not your breathing that's the problem. It's not because you're breathing too hard or too soft. And even if you were, would that be because of the blockage on your face? So it's the only thing causing the problem is the mask, not your breathing. But this is just another psyop manipulation trying to pretend that it's your fault. All of it's your fault. It says scientists at PN, have developed guidelines. So they're now retraining you how to breathe. Does that make sense? Did we all just forget how to breathe? I guess so. Scientists at PN Medical just concluded a preliminary investigation in three states with help from Mayo Clinic. Mayo, as you should remember, Prisma Health, you should remember, the Shape Medical System of effects wearing face masks. As more Americans become accustomed to wearing face masks, right, because it's not going away, ladies and gentlemen, that's the point, as this doctor wants to tell you right here. Global Health, pandemic prep, emerging infections and health policy, MD, U.S. Congress. This is a person that is somebody you should, you know, at least take seriously in regard to their points and their comments. I feel like there is this perception that once we have coronavirus vaccine, life will go back to normal. Life will not be like it was pre-COVID. Even after we have a vaccine, you will still need to use good health hygiene, maintain physical distance, avoid crowds, and wear masks. Told you so. God, it's, I don't know what, I mean, I can't think. Everything we needed was in front of us. And now they're going to slowly start dripping it out, let you know that it's only just, this is just good hygiene now. That's what we should, that's what we just, it's no brain, it's common sense, right? That now all the time we need to do these things because look what happened. Who didn't see that coming? People who are choosing to blindly believe the same politicians that have lied to you about everything your entire life. But get ready, get accustomed to wearing masks all the time because that's your future. And as I keep saying, if you knew this would never end and be the rest of your life, would you still be okay with allowing these things? Many are experiencing unpleasant challenges, he says, that can arise from changing the way that they breathe, including anxiety, headaches, and confusion and fatigue. Now, again, are we really trying to argue? Is he really trying to argue that everybody somehow just started breathing differently? Or is it that you have a thing over your mouth that's causing you to breathe differently? And then that's a really ignorant argument to say that it's the breathing and not the mask affecting your breathing. Or more specifically, a targeted effort to deceive you and manipulate your perception, which has been proving respiratory education and solution for 40 years. Apparently, they're not good at it. They're talking about the company. It says he's applying its unique expertise to develop and share strategies that will help people breathe more effectively and feel better while wearing masks, because it's always about keeping you wearing the mask. It's so disgusting. Recommended breathing strategies. Now watch this, guys. This is just incredible.
I'd like you to think, take five. Before I'm putting on a mask, I'm going to take five quality respirations. Once I have the mask on, I'm going to take five more. And then when I remove the mask.
My God. Do you hear the bird chirping in the background? Like, do you not read the whole, while you're all cooped up in your home and you're not allowed to go do anything without wearing a mask or, you know, all the horrible things that are being forced on your life. They want you to associate this very restrictive and horrifying thing with happiness and being outside and being free. And that's my take on it. But just like Derek and I were just talking about, these things have meaning.
I have quality respirations. Once I have the mask on, I'm going to take five more. And then when I remove the mask, I'm going to take the most important five respirations. And I'll tell you why. Masks have become part of our everyday lives. The CDC recommends we wear masks whenever social distancing becomes difficult.
Of course, well, they only started doing that once the political movement made them. And in fact, when it started, and every time before now, they said, nah, you don't need to because they don't do anything for you other than stopping spitlets from falling out of your mouth, which we've already shown droplets are stopped 97% of the time they get through on a cloth mask. And this really only spreads by aerosolized particulates. So that's a bunch of BS. But sure, listen to them.
Everyday lives.
And of course, masks are part of your everyday life, right? That's your future.
The CDC recommends we wear masks whenever social distancing becomes difficult.
Now, think about that. There's plenty of cases where people are being forced to wear masks when they're outside, when they're jogging, when they're alone, in plenty of places around the world. But sure, you know, it's just, that's their recommendation, but we have to do it. But people who are in charge can make it more severe. Does that make any sense to anybody?
We wear the masks to protect others, because we might be asymptomatic.
That's just simply not true. That lie has been shown to be wildly incorrect. From the idea that most of these masks don't even properly work the way, like N95s do not stop when you breathe out. So when you wear an N95 mask, which is the one they told you should be wearing in the beginning, when you breathe out it, you breathe straight out of the vent. When you breathe in, it closes and stops because it's about stopping dust and particulates in the air, not the kind of size that a virus is. So when you're wearing anything else, the idea that you're protecting anybody is a complete illusion. As they keep telling you, it has a statistically insignificant reduction on transmission. And that goes both ways. The studies that I've showed you make it very clear that they specifically talk about in regard to either with you breathing out or you breathing in. I mean, what more? These are random controlled trials from the NIH and National Library of Medicine that say exactly that. There's not been any other studies since then other than meta-analysis and observational, which are done with very political clear slants. And even if you disagree with that, they're still not the gold standard, not the random controlled trials, which they would say if I was waving an observational study about something they disagreed with. Oh, it's not random controlled trial. What a conspiracy theorist. But those rules only apply one way, you see.
We might not feel sick, but we still have the potential to carry the virus and give it to others.
And you might not feel sick because maybe you took a PCR test, which has a potential 90% positive, false positive rate. So maybe you're not asymptomatic at all, but in fact, just not sick in any sense of the word.
So wearing the mask absolutely is critical in slowing the spread. However,
but that's simply not what people are saying. And even in the case where they're arguing there's a reduction in spread, are arguing because that's done in combination with washing and social distancing. That's the illusion. Because the masks, as I keep telling you, don't have a statistically significant reduction in transmission. That means they don't work. They don't have an effect going in or out. And that is what their study said. That's not my, it is my opinion, but that's not what I'm not saying that's what I think. I'm saying that's what the NIH found in numerous studies over and over and over and over. And by the way, every single show now, I list all of those studies. By the way, some of which don't actually, some of which say something what you might not agree with. I mean, some of these studies, in fact, show you that they argue that they help. When you actually dig into the insides of the study, they come to the opposite conclusion, and then just still argue that they work at the end. And that's the point. You need to read these things, because then people see some of the ones I share and they go, that doesn't even say what you think it says. And I'm like, you know what it does? It does. You just didn't read it. All you did was read the title or the conclusion, and you think, you know, that's research. It's very sad. The point is that all those studies are there, and all you have to do is think for yourself, and you'll see it quite quickly. Now, I'm going to leave this off because this will go on forever. This video is very frustrating. But the point is, this is your new reality. You just got to breathe differently because it's your fault. Not theirs, your fault. Health expert, mask wearing will remain mandatory. That's what that tweet was from. Top doctor who served as an expert witness for the U.S. Congress says that even after COVID-19 vaccines available, mask wearing and other distancing measures will remain mandatory. That's your future, ladies and gentlemen. But don't listen to me. Trust the government, because that's worked so well in the past, right? Well, I'm going to breeze past some of these things because we're going to talk about these more in the future. This is important again. The idea, well, I just mentioned this again the other day, and I still haven't got a chance to dive into this with you guys, but the flu vaccine is halted in Singapore after 48 people die in South Korea. This is the same flu vaccine, by the way, that we're talking about around the world, that we're talking about increases 36% chance of generally getting other infections, and it gives 36% chance of getting coronaviruses as a general category. That's literally what the Pentagon study says. I'm not arguing that it does specifically anything to COVID-19. I'm not arguing that it says anything other than what it literally says, that it increases potentially 36% the chance of getting other infections. Within that, the more specific one is coronaviruses as a category. Now that COVID-19 is in existence, so we're told, that would be included in that category. And yes, it's very similar. So the idea is this does potentially increase that. And this, what they're saying now, is it also apparently is killing people in South Korea. But sure, trust everybody, including the one with the experimental vaccines. If this is the normal one and it's killing 50 people, maybe we should be concerned about the one that they barely, never succeeded, pushing out super fast without all the testing. And of course, that genetically modifies your body. And then, of course, also realize that I just pointed this as well, they're warning that the vaccines could increase the risk of HIV infection without any hint of irony. Like the idea, that's impossible, right? The flu vaccine could never increase the risk of coronavirus. You're a crazy conspiracy theorist. But wait, COVID-19 vaccine could increase the risk of HIV infection. Not even close to the same, they want you to believe, which is just stupid. It's still about virus interference, which is the same point they make in the vaccine in the Pentagon study about flu vaccines. The idea is that these vaccines increase the risk of other infections in some cases. And here we are again. So if we have the flu vaccine potentially increasing the risk of whatever this is we're dealing with in the general category and its general infections, and then we have the COVID-19 vaccine being added into the mix, which also increases the risk of other infections, and people are taking both of those at the same time frame, well, doesn't that just meet the possibility for a perfect storm? I feel like I had that saved, but I just saw today they're talking about the idea of the twindemic, right? Oh, here, I bet you I just searched for that exactly, and I guarantee that will come up. Yep. Let's see what they have to say. See? I knew it. A CDC warns of a possible twindemic.
Who wants to see it?
Our potential flu shot shortage a concern, right? No, let's not concern ourselves with the idea that your own study says that it could increase the risk of infection and we're supposed to be in the middle of a pandemic and why we wouldn't consider that or even discuss it and then acknowledge and say, well, this is why that doesn't apply. No, none of that. They just scream conspiracy theorist and shout you down. And now on top of the flu vaccine, which is part of this twindemic, increasing that risk, well, we also have the other one. Now we've got COVID-19 potentially increasing risk of other types. So imagine what happens when that twindemic becomes the twindemic because it's the two vaccines that are causing the problems. What happens then? Well, of course, you know what happens. We get censored for pointing it out. They scream that we don't know what we're talking about. And they say we need more vaccines because we're in a more situation. It's another pandemic. Has nothing to do with the vaccines, which, as Judy Mikovits points out, are completely contaminated from years and years before. But we're crazy, you know? Again, to reference the point as we mentioned in the interview with Dr. Mikovits, that, here we are, that this hasn't even been isolated, right? That we're talking about, here is the document from the FDA, as I've shown you many times. I'm showing you on the show, by the way, where it says right here, since no qualified isolates of the COVID-19 are currently available. They listed as 2019 nCoV because that's the time it was being called. But that's the first one. Now, the point they keep trying to say, oh, well, it's because it was still going on and they didn't even let us know. We just showed you why that was a lie. And when this came out, they very much did. Or they should have anyway. And the idea is that they just said they didn't have any. And this is what, and at this point, they were already working on things. So are we just going to pretend like they claim they didn't have it, but it all made sense? And then, of course, ignore this one too. It says very clearly, the ongoing outbreak of the recently emerged novel coronavirus poses a challenge for public health laboratories as virus isolates are unavailable. Uh-oh. Well, let's just not talk about these things because it doesn't make sense. John Rappaport put out an article today, by the way, that I recommend you read. That's right. No more fake news. I'll include this in the links as well so you guys can check it out, where he makes the same point. He goes over all this stuff and he actually goes again. He goes and lists the things they're saying, attacking that argument and showing you why it's nonsense and showing you why this is very clear evidence that it was not isolated. It's despite the fact that they'll admit, if you drive the conversation in, that they never met Koch's postulates, which, by the way, is the same as a random controlled trial is the gold standard for these studies. Koch's postulates is the gold standard for proving a virus is present. Right? That for proving that it's isolated, that it exists, and that is what's causing the problem. They never did it. Every single time before this, Koch's postulates, what they would claim was the gold standard, even though there's past times where they didn't meet it as well, but they didn't meet it this time. They just did something different. That's a fact. And here's the examples of them showing you that it's not isolated, but we're crazy, you know? Here's the Belgian health experts demanding full investigation into the WHO for faking COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, the point is that's what these Belgian health experts are saying. It's incredible that we are not allowed to discuss all of the incredibly, I mean, the mountain. Do you realize that there are far, far, far more experts that are now speaking out and saying what we're saying than there are the opposite? But the problem is they all get censored and attacked and disparaged, and you don't notice how many of them there actually are. It's incredible. And as I pointed out a moment ago, including the former chief science officer of Pfizer, saying that the second wave was completely faked and based on false test data. Same thing we're saying. Also note that I showed with Derek on here that I mentioned beforehand, I find it very revealing that on the CDC website, oh, and by the way, the other one, the isolates, was based on CDC information. But this one, coming from the CDC website, and it says October 21st right there, most people might not even realize. And it says, they argue close contact is how this spreads, right? And it says, what they define that as is someone who was within 6 feet of an infected person for a cumulative total of 15 minutes or more. How often do you stick around somebody for 15 minutes? Unless there's somebody you're intentionally going to see or someone that's in your family, right? So if you have to be around somebody for a total of 15 minutes or more for this thing to translate, so we're being told, according to the CDC, why then are we masking, distancing, and all the other? Because if you're just walking down the street and passing people, well, you're clearly not near them for 15 minutes or more. Now, you could argue that if all of them are infected, well, that could add up to 15 minutes. Well, then it becomes a hypothetical, seeing as how the people walking the streets don't seem to be infected because they're not isolating, so we're told, and so on and so on. It's all hypothetical. But the reality being that 15 minutes or more seems to challenge the whole idea of why this thing is so, the restrictive nature of why we're being forced into our homes and masked and distancing and all of it does not add up. That's my take on it. Oh, and I wanted to add this before I end off here, that Facebook is now deploying aggressive measures to combat election unrest, which Whitney is going to be doing some really interesting work on in the few days coming. But I want you to realize that as we're getting to this point, and people like us are being actively censored for pointing out what medical professionals around the world are saying, and this applies to not just COVID-19, but the election and everything else, they're telling you right now that they will be censoring whatever they want based on the election. Their executives are implementing emergency measures reserved for at-risk counties in a company-wide effort to bring down the online temperature, because that's their job, right? To control how you feel online. Apparently, that's what they're telling you, because you're not allowed to be mad online, apparently, that they need to control the anger. Don't you see how much of this stuff is them trying to control the flow of the masses, right? We got to keep the masses under control, because if they riot and scream and try to protest and revolt, well, we can't allow that. So we're going to seed you with all this information to keep you under control. And if the online temperature gets too high, well, Facebook's going to step in, make sure it goes down. Is that the future that you thought you were building towards, ladies and gentlemen? Well, maybe the people that think that they're censoring the right people that will eventually come back around and hit you in the butt. Well, we'll see. But it says right here, Sunday, that the social media giant plans to limit the spread of viral content and lower the benchmark for suppressing potentially inflammatory posts. So it's not even borderline anymore. They just have the slightest inclination to remove you, and they will do so. And the spread of viral content? So you just can't get viral content now? That doesn't say what kind. It's just limit the spread of viral content. They don't want the things to become spread and viral unless they want them to. That's the point. Same with YouTube and all the rest. They control how it works and how it goes out. It says the tools, now a key component of Facebook's strategy to prepare for contentious U.S. election, which they just have continued to tell you is going to be bad, it's going to be chaotic, it's going to be revolution, it's going to be war, it's going to be civil war, it's going to be, I mean, they've never one of them seen these exercises end up saying, hey, it all works out, right? It turns out it's all going to work fine, everyone's going to go the way, no, none of them. Every one of them tell you it's going to be chaos. Why? Because it's going to be chaos, because that's their plan. And for what they, oh, you're crazy. Well, when we get there and it happens, well, then you can have your excuse for why it happened and I was still wrong. That's fine. Turns out that I wasn't, though, because it happened, right? And that's the point. Anyway, this is going to be censoring, and it's going to continue to happen all the way through. And I wanted to add this at the very end. 1972. This is the same website that we've been showing. World Health Organization. These are bulletins that were released by the World Health Organization. And I believe still are, but this one is from 1972. Now I want you to read, excuse me, I want you to read what this says. I have it highlighted here for you. An attempt should be made to ascertain whether viruses can in fact exert selective effects on immune function. So right there, they're asking whether an attempt should be made to find out whether viruses can specifically and selectively attack specific parts of an immune function. Now, does that sound like the kind of research that you do when you're trying to help people? Clearly not. Then it says the possibility should also be looked into that the immune response to the virus may itself be impaired if the infecting virus damages more or less selectively the cells responding to the viral antigens. Now, you could argue that this could be a way to, you know, as it says, that the immune response of the virus, so it could be impaired. The way that sounds to me is if they make it selectively attack specific areas, specific viral antigens, it says, responding to specific viral antigens, that it could essentially attack your immune system or stop it from being able to respond. And it says, if this proves to be the case, virus-induced immunodepression might conceivably be highly instrumental in prolonging certain virus infections. So why would you want that to happen? You can make the dumb argument they do, the lazy argument that, well, other bad guys are doing that, so we're doing it to find out how to stop it. Sure. I always forget that for Insuron. I've got some swamp beachfront property to sell you, or whatever that analogy is. It's just like, if you're that dumb to fall for such an obvious, like, it's so, that is what you do when you're trying to use this as a weapon. It says, such as marine leukemia, hepatitis, subaccurate scrawl, whatever those are the terms, or infections caused by the things they list off. So they're researching how to weaponize these viruses. That's how it seems to me. And you can, whether you argue it's for a good purpose or not, do you not realize that we're talking about something in 1972 that's led to where we are now? That clearly was the path we're on, that all they did was create a campaign like the Great Reset website that Derek pointed out. It's really just a propaganda. This is a marketing campaign. So what they wanted to do seemed quite clear when they thought nobody was paying attention. And now that we have the internet and everyone's focusing and paying attention, well, you won't see them come out and say, hey, maybe we should try to manipulate this thing to make sure it can hurt people more. No, they're not going to say it like that. But now we're at a point where people are buying into the illusion because they're just so desperate to hear what they want to hear. So as usual, guys, the time is now. The time is now to step up and stop and say what you want to say and reach out to people that don't know about this stuff. We're on a path here that is so incredibly, this is the most important time in the history of our world, in my opinion. Now, I could be wrong on that, and I hope that I'm wrong. But this endgame feeling that we have, we need to realize that it's on us to drive that direction, right? We need to be thinking to ourselves, not that this, you know, that look how bad it is and look at all the negative things. And I understand that that's what we're talking about a lot, is this negative stuff. But I hope people remember that it's because without knowing this, we won't be able to stop the direction. And what we need to tell ourselves is realize that it's not about whether or not we stop them. We need to realize that we've already won. Right? That's, we need to manifest our reality, that realize that we have already won and it's just there waiting for us. And we need to get there. If we tell ourselves that it's a foregone conclusion and we're already lost, then we've already lost. I've said the analogy before that my father used to tell me, that some people sometimes have a hard time wrapping their minds around, but it seems quite simple to me, that the man who believes he can and the man who believes he can't are both right. If you believe you're going to fail, you're going to fail. But if you believe you're going to succeed, and you're going to succeed. So it's on you and how you perceive your future. So if you're telling yourself we lost, then we're going to lose. But we need to realize that we've already won. And it's just on us to seize it. Thank you for being here. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you thinking for yourselves and asking all the questions. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.